Right now to an unprecedented move from the king of the UK as he strips his brother Andrew of all titles, including Prince.
What now for Andrew, Fergie, and of course their daughters? Full analysis of that. Meanwhile, the row that won't go away for Chancellor Rachel Reeves. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch was on LBC last night.
Keir Starmer said lawmakers shouldn't be lawbreakers. What Rachel Reeves looks like she has done is a criminal offence.
Plus, football ace Paul Scholes stands down to care for his heavily autistic child. What are the battles that you have coping for children like that? All those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Prince Andrew will now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor after the King moved to strip his brother of his titles, styles and honours. The monarchy has faced weeks of pressure over fresh revelations about Andrew's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch gave LBC her reaction moments after Buckingham Palace's statement was released.
I think that the King has clearly felt that this is the right decision for the royal family. It must have been a very difficult thing for him to have done. I mean, that's having to do that to your own brother. But the standards and expectations in society now are very high.
Andrew will also move out of Royal Lodge in Windsor. LBC's royal correspondent Peter Hunt says he will move to a private residence on the Sandringham estate.
The key thing they needed to achieve was that there was no taxpayers' money involved in where he lived. And the price that the King has had to pay is that he now has to fund Andrew's lifestyle. So he will look after any compensation Andrew is entitled to now that he's been evicted from the Royal Lodge, the 30-bedroom mansion that he used to live in with no rent.
The family of Andrew's main accuser, the late Virginia Giuffre, says she has brought down a prince. He continues to deny the allegations against him. Sir Keir Starmer has told Rachel Reeves she will face no further action over the failure to obtain a rental licence for her family home. It's emerged the Chancellor's letting agent didn't apply for the paperwork on her behalf. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has the latest.
We had some more exchanges of letters between the Prime Minister and the independent ethics advisor and the Chancellor last night, which revealed those emails from the lettings agency and her husband. And it appears that she is now in the clear. Sir Keir Starmer has said that she has no more questions to answer about this matter.
The Metropolitan Police says analysis shows that live facial recognition is helping to make London safer. The technology led to more than 900 arrests in the last year. More than a quarter were for people suspected of violence against women and girls. MPs say ministers still don't know when RAF jets will be able to carry nuclear weapons or how much the project will cost. Sir Keir Starmer announced in June that the UK would purchase 12 F-35A jets. The MOD says its plans will ensure the programme delivers on budget. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 97.60 after closing up 3 points yesterday, and the pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, mild with rain slowly clearing the southeast this morning. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers with strong winds in the west, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
The Admiral is conducting the Admouth Orchestra.
Let's hear what happens when your home and car aren't insured together.
Oh, not exactly the smoothest arrangement.
Again, but this time with Admiral Multicover. And a one, two, three.
Your car and home insurance in one policy. Now that sounds good. Admiral, always looking out for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 7, Friday, October the 31st. A story that first broke 14 years ago, and now we read unprecedented action as Prince Andrew merely becomes Andrew and he moves out of that large mansion in Windsor. He's off to the Sandringham Royal Estate. What of his wife? What of the children? And if he'd just shown some degree of contrition, noting that he denies all the allegations, and if he hadn't, no, I can say this, changed his story, might we feel differently towards him? Or are we now guilty of effectively dancing on a royal grave? In other news, soccer ace Paul Scholes, Manchester United, speaking on the Stick to Football podcast. His decision to give up live TV work to care for his severely autistic son, Aidan.
Because of Aidan, obviously special needs and stuff that you'll probably know about, all the work I do now is just around his routines, because he has quite a strict routine.
You heard other footballers there, Ian Wright, Roy Keane and Jill Scott. Is that similar to what you have, looking after your child or possibly your children? To a story you just heard on the LBC News Bulletin.
I've just watched police arrest a wanted man in central London using facial recognition cameras. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper with the exclusive report.
Back to the Rachel Reeves story. As the Chancellor would imagine, she probably thinks she's in the clear, but clearly she misled the Prime Minister with her first version when she said she didn't know the property needed a licence, or the couple didn't, when her husband had already been in correspondence with the letting agents. We'll try and get to the bottom of that. And when I tell you that 460 people were killed in a maternity hospital yesterday, where's the outrage? Oh, no, it's not Gaza. It's Sudan.
Where is the liberal outrage? We cannot have a hierarchy of conflict with this conflict at the bottom.
Then Foreign Secretary David Lammy, now Deputy Prime Minister, of course. If this was Gaza, we'd be sending in the Marines and there'd be a Cobra meeting. Strike that. Most of those protests are fueled purely by anti-Semitism. Where's the concern of 460 dead in a maternity hospital?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
When my phone buzzed last night and my LBC colleague told me the news, I then spent at least the next hour and a half, possibly 2 hours, just watching transfixed its television screens. That was in this country, of course, the news that finally, the Prince Andrew will be stripped of style, titles and honours, more on what that means. But as I was watching, so was much of the rest of the world.
More now on that breaking news from the UK, with the King officially stripping titles and honours from Prince Andrew.
And we have breaking news from the UK. Buckingham Palace says King Charles will strip his younger brother Andrew of his titles and honours and force him out of his home.
Right now to an unprecedented move from the King of the UK as he strips his brother Andrew of all titles, including Prince.
Oh, brother, that was the action that was taken. You heard 7 News Australia, CBC News, which is in Canada, and NBC News in the US. Meanwhile, they were recording a Question Time last night. Intriguingly, in Yorkshire, remember the former Duke of York, when the host, Fiona Bruce, interrupted to say...
I'm stopping the recording because we have a breaking story which we should respond to. That's why I stopped you, Matt, so forgive me. So, Prince Andrew... The King has initiated a process, so we're going to discuss this. Prince Andrew will no longer be Prince Andrew. He will be Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. He will surrender the lease to his home, and he will find alternative private accommodation.
No messing with the folk of Yorkshire there for their former Duke. They couldn't applaud quick enough, but as I said at the top, he's gone from a Falklands hero and a playboy prince to a disgraced ex-Duke and the pal of a paedophile. LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma tracks the decline.
The first child born to a reigning monarch in a century, Prince Andrew, the third child and second son of Queen Elizabeth II, often thought to be her favourite, gained popularity for his service as a helicopter pilot in the Royal Navy and was considered a national hero by some for his role in the Falklands War.
I'm overjoyed at the fact that it's all over. Overjoyed and happy for the islanders themselves, who must have thought it was the most fantastic day in the world to see the British troops come walking in.
And the popularity continued, with 500 million people worldwide embracing Fergie fever, watching the Prince marry Sarah Ferguson in 1986. The couple had 2 children, Princess Beatrice in 1988 and Princess Eugenie 2 years later.
What's it like to be a daddy?
Wonderful.
How's your your wife and the baby?
Very well. Very well indeed.
What does the baby look like? Does she resemble you or your wife?
Very difficult to tell who she resembles, but probably after her father and mother, like most.
But his marriage to Sarah Ferguson wasn't to last, divorcing in 1996, although the pair remained amicable.
I would like to think that lessons have been learnt, because, my goodness, some lessons did need learning.
But it was the prince's relationship with the disgraced and deceased convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein that unravelled him. And Virginia Giuffre alleged Andrew slept with her three times when she was just a teenager, allegations he strenuously denied in that 2019 Emily Maitlis interview.
There's a slight problem with the sweating, because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, because I had suffered an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War.
The prince's popularity plummeted and his words were picked apart.
I'd taken Beatrice to a Pizza Express in Woking for a party.
Why would you remember that?
Because going to Pizza Express in Woking is an unusual thing for me to do.
Andrew gave up his military titles in 2022, then more recently his Duke of York title. But the pressure on the monarchy still proved too much.
How long have you known about Andrew and Epstein?
The king has now told his brother he has to move out of his home at the Royal Lodge, stripping him of his prince title, with him now to be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor.
LBC Shivani Sharma reporting. More on the royal side with Peter Hunt in just a moment. But let's bring into the conversation Reverend Jonathan Aitken, who eagle-eyed listeners will remember I spoke with quite recently concerning this. Mr. Aitken is a Church of England priest, prison chaplain, former cabinet minister and Conservative MP, and of course has had his own brushes with the law, noting that Andrew, of course, continues to protest his innocence as he was jailed many years ago for perjury. Reverend Jonathan Aitken joins me now. Can I put it to you, sir, that we're starting to get guilty of dancing on someone's grave? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, I think the King's decisive action has now clearly deepened this Shakespearean tragedy with a further personal disaster for the man we now call Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. And at the same time, I think we shouldn't forget, as the Buckingham Palace statement did not forget, that this is a trail of disasters affecting many other people who are victims of abuse. But I think the big question now is, where does Andrew go from here? And it's clearly into some form of exile, stripped of every title he held so dear, and it's going to be a painful and lonely experience for him. I think we shouldn't do anything other than accept the inevitable. The storm had just got too fierce. And I happen to know the Sandringham estate of it, because my grandparents lived there for 20-odd years in the 30s, and my mother grew up there. And I say to your listeners, Sandringham is not Siberia. The Sandringham estate is a community of probably many kind Norfolk people. And so all the pain and the future problems will lie with Andrew for some time. The big question is now, I think, now, even though he can never recover, can he adjust? Can he find peace? And that, I think, is probably the question for the future.
Mr. Aitken, the teachings of the Church are about love, redemption and forgiveness. Is there, many years hence, I sense, is there a path back for Andrew?
Yes, certainly there is. But it's largely, I think, up to him. I can only tell you from someone who's had much milder troubles that there are paths of personal and spiritual redemption. There are paths to a new, happy life. They may well involve a combination of prayer and penitence and getting on with a very different style of life. But I think if I was Andrew, apart from trying to get into those things like prayer and penitence, I look at a rather famous poem by G.K. Chesterton, also a hymn, and it contains the lines, "And the woodlands and the homesteads plead in silence for their peace." And I think that that's what Andrew's got to do, plead in silence for peace. And I pray that he will find it.
And last,
a long haul.
And lastly, Mr. Aitken, can God show, noting that Andrew has denied any of the sexual claims, but clearly he has mixed with a fairly unseemly bunch, can God offer forgiveness?
Well, God always offers forgiveness, but it sort of, I think, takes two to tango, even with God. And so we'll pray that there will be a meeting of minds and souls there.
I love that image of a tangoing God. Thank you, Reverend Jonathan Aitken, Church of England priest, prison chaplain, former cabinet minister and Conservative MP, jailed back in 1999, my goodness me, for perjury. But subsequently, of course, he found his path, and indeed he taught fellow prisoners literary skills and others. Right, Royal Commentator Peter Hunt, the other side of the news, and on the other big story, which I sense would still be front page news, is Rachel Reeves now in the clear over renting out her house? One person thinks not.
She has broken the law. It is a criminal offence. She's got a lot of questions to answer. And if she has been seen to break the law, then yes, she should resign.
That's Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch. Not more on that after this. 7:15, LBC News headlines. Simon Conway.
The King has begun a formal process to remove Prince Andrew's titles and honours. He'll also move out of Royal Lodge in Windsor. Rachel Reeves has been told she'll face no further action over the failure to obtain a rental licence for her family home, and a leading charity says corridor care in hospitals is a crisis in plain sight. LBC weather mild with a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Egham Bypass, the A30, is closed westbound at the Runnymede roundabout. It's following an accident and it's very busy on the approach. In central London, Shaftesbury Avenue is closed both ways between Cambridge Circus and Greek Street, and that's because of an accident. And in Thornton Heath, it's slow on Mitcham Road, going westbound also after an accident. On the Underground, the Northern Line can't run between Nine Elms and Battersea Power Station. No service on the Piccadilly Line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge. And the Metropolitan line is also part suspended. No service between Baker Street and Aldgate. Then there are minor delays on the rest of the line. And also on the Underground, Lancaster Gate Station remains closed.
LBC.
Build your own package with TUI. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3? 5? 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI. Live happy. Atoll and Abtu protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Big, big, big motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pumpkin each, kids! Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
7:18 headlines in a moment. Let's get straight to Peter Hunt, Royal Commentator and Broadcaster. Peter, thanks for hanging on the line. Hope I've not inconvenienced you this morning. Noting this story first broke 14 years ago, there have been countless developments since. What is the tipping point that's caused this action? Do you imagine that there's possibly more to come with US lawmakers seeking to speak with Andrew? Is there some story bubbling in the background? What do you think forced the King's hand? Morning, Peter.
Good morning. I think there's a whole number of tipping points. Remember, this is the fourth attempt since 2019 to deal with the Andrew contagion. You know, his relationship with Epstein has scarred two reigns, in part because Queen Elizabeth, his mother, had a soft spot, in part because the King, King Charles, was a ditherer, not anymore. And I think they've dealt with it not out of strength, but out of fear. Fear, as you suggest, of what more may come out, what more might come from the US, and fear, I think, especially of remaining out of step with public opinion. They haven't been this out of step since 1997 in the aftermath of Diana's death and the arguments about the flag on the pole at Buckingham Palace, the Queen being in Balmoral. And I think really key was that laughter and that applause in that Question Time audience, the public view there, that heckler you interviewed on your show earlier this week when he shouted, "How long have you known about Andrew and Epstein?" So those things captured the zeitgeist. And this institution's reputation was being tarnished, and this was about them trying to restore their credibility.
Peter, you've watched the family, the firm, for decades. I read this is unprecedented. Is it?
Oh, I mean, the statement was blunt. It was brutal. I've never read anything like it before. I mean, this is Andrew, who actively revelled in being a blood prince, you know, not a prince by marriage. He actively revelled in the fact that his daughters were blood princesses. His mother was the queen. His brother is the king. Now, he's a commoner. He's as common as I am. He's Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. He's been sent into exile in his own land. I mean, as Jonathan Aitken said with beautiful understatement, Sandringham isn't Siberia. But he is in exile. He will be out of sight, and the royals really now will be hoping that he's out of mind. But that, of course, they cannot guarantee and they cannot control.
What lies behind, I know the two others, but stripped of style, titles and honours. I get titles, I get honours. What is style, Peter?
It's the His Royal Highness. So he will now lose Prince, Duke of York, Earl of Inverness, Baron Killyleagh. The style of His Royal Highness, the honours are the Order of the Garter and the Knight Grand Cross of the Victorian Order. And another key unremarked upon about all of this is it has shown the powers that a king can have with the encouragement and support, active support of the government, to do these things himself without, and this is a key thing, the other thing they wanted to avoid was this going into Parliament, because they were worried, I think, that if MPs got a taste for starting to ask questions about royals, they could ask more. And, and crucially, there's a countless range of questions they could ask about royal finances, not least who paid Prince Andrew's settlement and how much money did he receive over the years, and Sarah Ferguson, his ex-wife, from Epstein.
Peter, lastly, is it time to revisit the video from the funeral for the Duchess of Kent in September? Because you could see there was frostiness between Andrew and his brother, the King. It was an iceberg between Andrew and his nephew, Prince William.
Well, I think, again, that was another of those reminders along this path where the royals came to realise that they had not done enough and that they needed to do more, because at each time where they had started, because if you look and think back to the Emily Maitlis interview with him, the disastrous one in 2019, then that was when he said, "I'll step back." Then his mother, the Queen, while she was still on the throne, got rid of his titles. That wasn't enough. Then, after more emails came out which seemed to question his version of events as to when he'd cut his ties with Epstein, he voluntarily gave up the Duke of York. But I think all along, at each step afterwards, they finally realised they had not done enough. And, you know, his statement that time, which was more sort of arrogant rather than any contrition, and so they issued the statement they issued last night. And I think in all of this, we shouldn't lose sight of all the statements from Virginia Giuffre's family, where they have praised the King. They've talked about her achievements, but in interviews they have said it's not enough. We have to have some sort of investigation. And as you have said repeatedly during this program, Andrew, of course, has denied the allegations that Virginia Giuffre was forced to have sex with him on three occasions. But what the family are saying is that he, Andrew, needs to be behind bars, period.
Lastly, what of Fergie and the daughters?
Well, the daughters, I think, the royal family, the sort of the king, have been very keen to ensure that the daughters, Princess Eugenie and Beatrice, who William the heir and Charles are very fond of, can continue as they are. Of course, they'll be desperately worried about the impact this will have on their dad, as any daughters would about their dad. But no, there is no impact on them. As to Sarah Ferguson, Andrew's ex-wife, she is a private citizen, and the expectation is that she will sort out her accommodation privately. And that's also another key aspect of the Andrew settlement, is that there is no taxpayers' money involved in it. He will be on the King's estate in Sandringham, and the King will fund any money that he needs.
Thanks for the forensic background as ever, Peter Hunt, royal commentator and broadcaster. Coming to your calls in just a moment. Well, it is, of course, the front page news. I'll quickly go through the headlines. Finally, it's just one word for the front page of the Daily Mirror. King removes style, titles and honours from brother, is the Daily Express. The other big story, and understandably the Daily Mail is sticking with that because they were very much in the vanguard of this, humiliation for Reeves as she changes changes her story. This is Rachel Reeves, who, remember, first off said she didn't know she needed a licence. She and her husband didn't know they needed a licence to let the house out in Dulwich in South London. And now correspondence has been unearthed that shows there were actually communication between her husband and the letting agency. We maybe look at that a little bit later in the show. On the LBC app, it is, of course, King wields the axe against Andrew. And quickly, let's go around the world for some newspaper headlines. The Sydney Morning Herald: Andrew believed the worst was over. The King had other ideas. The Australian: how the outcast, formerly known as Prince, was exiled to Norfolk. And this is the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting, front page: King Charles strips brother Andrew of Prince title and royal estate. 7:24. Had he shown some contrition? I say again, he says he's innocent, he maintains his innocence, but had he not been so arrogant and brusque in interviews, would he cut him a little more slack? Seamus in Wellington, what do you say, Seamus? Good morning.
Morning to you, Nick. I'm pleased that the King has acted in the way that he has.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should lose sight of the fact, Nick, that he hasn't acted on moral authority. He's acted on fear. And to preserve the royal family's space,
yep,
and place.
I think that's fair, yeah.
There'll be no settlement or satisfaction in the minds of the people of this country until he is held to justice properly and answers the questions that he needs to answer in America, in front of being compelled by the FBI or the courts to tell the truth about what he knew, what he didn't know, who he was involved with.
Do I take from your words, Seamus, that he's not gone far enough then? You think there's still, you still want to see him effectively in the dock?
I want to see truth and justice for the people that have been adversely affected by this. We should never lose sight of the fact, Nick, that a woman lost her life having been abused and trafficked by powerful men. The royal family...
I just need to say that, of course, Prince Andrew denies any involvement in that, but go on, just have to be really careful with that. Go ahead, Seamus.
And we do. We'll be as careful, Nick, as the royal family were when they paid her £12 million for not being abused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear every word you're saying. So what now, then, lastly? Where would you want this? You want to see him in a dock somewhere?
I'd like to see him extradited and answering under oath the truth. He will not have peace. He will not have peace in our minds until the victims of this terrible event are dealt with and recognised and acknowledged and admonished.
Thanks for that, Seamus. Coming to you, Robert, in just a moment. Lee asks, what happened to innocent before being proven guilty? Well, you can say he's been guilty of lying, and he's been guilty of making some shocking judgment calls and keeping the worst possible company. His judgment has to be called into question on just about everything, Lee. Isn't that the reality? Andrew and Saltburn, if we learn anything from this horrendous saga, it must be to check the moral fortitude of anyone we consider as an ambassador for Britain, negotiating lucrative business deals with extremely wealthy and powerful people around the world. Well, of course, what's that expression? If you put honey on the lips, don't be surprised when they lick, if they lick. And that is the truth, isn't it? You go around dealing with all these incredibly rich sheikhs and everyone else, you're going to want a piece of the action, aren't you? Robert, interesting enough, is in Quebec, or just outside Quebec, I imagine, in Canada. Robert, early in the morning for you, your take on what's happening over here. Good morning.
Good morning. I think the easy solution for for Pastor Prince Andrew will be to make him Governor General of the island of South Georgia in the South Atlantic.
The Falklands, where you're talking about the Falklands, where he fought in the early 80s in the Falklands War. Is that what you're saying, sir?
No, just South Georgia, which is several thousand miles to the east.
Oh, right. Why wouldn't you give him the Falklands? Didn't we have a governor? I seem to recall from the Falklands War someone wearing an extraordinarily plumed hat.
That's right. They have their own governor in the Falklands, but don't give him the Falklands. Just give him South Georgia.
Well, what
there's nothing.
Yeah, go on.
Well, there's nothing there but penguins.
Oh, you left me down the path. Brilliant.
So that way, he can't get any more trouble, because at the moment, what happens in 6 months' time when they have now a new scandal breaking loose because what he's done with somebody in Sandringham?
Well, let's not say that, let's not imply that there will be any of that inappropriate. But what more can they do, though, Robert? I mean, he's gone from being a prince, the Duke of York, the Earl of something else, with as many honours that you can shake a stick at, to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor.
I know, But it just strikes me that if you put him on the island on his own,
I like that. Yes.
Seriously, it's the same as Napoleon. It's what they did with Napoleon, isn't it?
Well, I haven't visited I haven't visited Sandringham, but I know Norfolk, and I think Norfolk is actually an extremely welcoming and rather wonderful place, as Jonathan Aitken was saying. So, or to use his words, he put it far more accurately. It's not exactly Siberia. Robert, thank you. Oh, is it front page news, by the way? Or did it dominate the news? Where are you? Last night before you went?
Not really, because it arrived too late, because it's like we're ahead of, you're ahead of us, you see, so
will it,
terms of
will
time.
It dominate the morning bulletins when you wake up in 4 hours' time or whatever? Would it be the front page news, do you imagine?
I don't know. I haven't checked.
All right. Let me know. Have a good weekend, Robert. Thank you for calling us from Canada. We will continue with that. Also, coming up later on the show, we will come back. Is she home free now? Home free for renting out her home in Dulwich, the Chancellor? Or surely still allegations that she told the Prime Minister one thing one day and then changed it the next? We'll look at that. And also after the news.
Investigations continue after a man is killed and three others are injured in a helicopter crash in Doncaster. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the details.
7:30 now, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara and LBC. Let's get the news headlines. Simon Conway.
Virginia Giuffre's family say she has brought down a prince after the king moved to strip his brother Andrew of all his titles. He'll now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and will move out of Royal Lodge. Andrew continues to deny allegations of sexual abuse. The Prime Minister has told Rachel Reeves she faces no further action over the failure to apply for a rental licence for her family home. The letting agent the Chancellor used has apologised for an oversight. And the UK is to provide a further £5 million in emergency humanitarian funding for the Caribbean following Hurricane Melissa. The money will help people whose homes have been damaged and those still without power. LBC weather, a mild day with rain slowly clearing the southeast this morning. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
If you're in a position where another £1,000 to find is the difference between you going on holiday and you not going on holiday, I do actually think, for a week, the one family holiday you get to take that year is actually a good reason for you to miss school with your child.
Tom Swarbrick.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
LBC.
Close your eyes, take a deep breath, and you're there. Welcome to Payment Paradise, powered by Dojo. Here, your EPOS and payments connect seamlessly. Transactions never stop flowing. Always on, always reliable. Next-gen technology keeps you ahead of the curve. And complete customer care is right by your side whenever you need it. This is Payment Paradise. Seamless, reliable, innovative, supportive. Brought to you by Dojo, number one for hospitality payments. For verification, see dojo.tech. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority and Electronic Money Regulations.
For 30 years, we've been opening doors. Opening doors for small businesses and large. Opening fully stocked fridges and same-day deliveries. Opening birthdays and graduations and new homes and happy tears and you shouldn't haves. Opening ambulances and life-saving support. Opening roads that open up cities and countries and continents. Opening up the world. See how the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter can open doors for your business at your local Mercedes-Benz dealer today.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
7:33, two aspects of the Andrew story that we're talking about. One, had he shown some contrition for his decision-making and his contrary claims? Would that have perhaps helped him a little? And are we now guilty of dancing on a man's grave? We'll have more of that. But into the world of finance now, joined by Anna McDonald, who's investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management, and joining me now. OK, a politician who never seems to be short of wind, Ed Miliband. What's happening to him, Anna? Good morning.
Well, there's a good morning and happy Halloween.
He's
probably not going to be very happy because there is talk of going back on some of those really punitive windfall taxes in the North Sea, and that's going to help, I think, Rachel Reeves meet some of her, she needs to raise more taxes, basically, and we need to use oil and gas, so why not get it from the North Sea rather than bring it in from elsewhere? But Ed Miliband is not happy about it because, you know, he really is on a mission to try and greenify our economy at, I would say, at whatever cost, really.
How much is it thought that the eco drive might feature in next month's budget, Anna?
Well, I think what we have to realise is we are paying the highest cost for energy in the developed world. I was looking at this earlier. We pay about four times what an American would pay. They pay more than a Chinese person would pay. So the energy is the lifeblood of our economy, and we need to make it cheaper, and we need to stop spending so much on the policy costs that we have now to try and greenify the economy, because we still need to use oil and gas. So why are we spending so much on wind turbines, on contracts that are locking ourselves into very punitive electricity prices?
Core, Apple are doing well. Yeah. What are the details?
Analysts were thinking that maybe the iPhone 17 would drive around 6% revenue growth, but actually Apple have said it's going to be nearer 12%. This is a company that is now worth $4 trillion, and the shares have reacted pretty well from the news last night, from their results. So we are seeing, you know, the shares up about another 2% or so in after hours trading, as it's called. And so people are still buying the iPhone 17. They think that the Christmas buying of the iPhone will still be very good. And also interesting, Apple is the one of the big seven stocks in the US where they aren't actually spending a huge amount on AI yet. They're kind of sitting on the sidelines. But they are an extremely profitable company.
Talking about profitable companies, two of the world's largest pharma companies are locked in a bidding war for whom or what?
It's for Metsera, it's a company that's much smaller than they are. These two giants are Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk. These are worth hundreds of billions of pounds. And they've both championed the weight loss injections. And now they're in a bidding war for something called Metsera, which is a company that has developed a drug that leads to weight loss, but not the muscle loss that's associated with it. Because apparently there's something called Ozempic face, which I don't think either of us have.
No.
And that's when you lose a lot of muscle as well as a lot of fat. So the race is on to develop drugs that enable you to lose fat, but not the associated muscle, because that's not healthy and it leads to
Game changer, isn't it? There.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you stop taking the drugs, if you've lost a lot of muscle, then you just put fat back on.
Lastly, the firm WPP, beloved of city commentators and city editors. Why is it important to my listeners? Why is it seen as important as an economic indicator, and what's happening there?
Well, WPP has had a very tough time. They have their share price has fallen over 60% this year, and it was a real stalwart of the UK advertising scene. And what they have suffered from is that they haven't been on the front foot with their development of or defences against the artificial intelligence advertising boom. So Meta, for example, makes it really easy for companies to create and buy their own ads. And WPP's media buying and their creative part of the business have just not been able to be on the front foot. And the new CEO, Cindy Rose, she comes from Microsoft, so she's going to try to turn this around. But they are having a really difficult time, and because companies big and small can use the new tech the tools that Meta and others provide rather than using WPP's services.
Anna McDonald, Investment Manager at Aubrey Capital Management, thanks for that. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll come to more of your calls. Mark, I want to hear what you have to say about Andrew, formerly known as Prince, a degree of contrition. Less of, and I think we can all say that there is an ugly streak of arrogance, and that appalling behaviour at the funeral last month for the Duchess of Kent, where I think he thought the crowds at Hunt Park had turned out to see him. And we'll pick that up with you, Mark, in a moment. But to a story we have mentioned a couple of times, a man died in a helicopter crash yesterday. Three other people were injured, including a boy of 10. This happened in Bentley, which is close to Doncaster. Alex Taylor-Brown is LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, and he's at the scene now. Alex, morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, well, we're about as close as we can get to the scene of the crash. I'm currently stood on Ings Road. This is sort of a narrow country lane leading towards the field. It's blocked off by police still following that crash. It's about sort of 500, 600 yards away from where I'm stood at the moment. Videos online, though, show the helicopter on its side with its tail bent in the air after it came down. That was at around 10:15 yesterday morning, just behind the Ings Road industrial estate here. It was around mid-afternoon that a private ambulance arrived, which never signals good news. At a short time later, we had that confirmation. A 70-year-old man had died at the scene after suffering serious injuries. The pilot, a 41-year-old man, and two other passengers, a 58-year-old woman, and as you say, Nick, a 10-year-old boy, received minor injuries. Images from flight radar show the helicopter leaving Retford-Gampston Airport in Nottingham yesterday morning, and it was in the air for just minutes before coming down. It was a private flight, and in a statement from the airport, they confirmed an aircraft based there, operated by an on-site tenant, had been involved in an incident. It's important to point out, Nick, that this is not a field in the middle of nowhere. This is, as I say, right next to a busy industrial estate. It's near a major railway line that connects trains from Yorkshire down to London. And there's a housing estate just around the corner as well. It's understood the wife of the pilot has posted on Facebook saying the grief is immeasurable at losing a beloved family member, and acknowledged the bravery of her husband, who she said managed to land the aircraft in unimaginable circumstances. Police have said that their thoughts are with the family and the loved ones of the man who has died in this tragic incident. As part of their investigation, they're asking for anyone with any information to get in touch, particularly if they have footage of the crash. At the Air Accidents Investigation Branch is also involved. Those investigations, Nick, very much underway.
Alex Taylor-Brown, LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, reporting from the scene just outside of Doncaster. 7:41. Mark is in Yorkshire as well. Mark's in Bingley, the other side of Yorkshire. Mark, your view on what we're hearing about Andrew, formerly known as Prince. Have they gone too far, not far enough? Which is it?
I think it's about time that he lost his all of his titles and became a commoner. I think he's brought the royal family into disrepute. Mm. But I believe that his attitude, his self-entitlement, self-importance, and his degree of entitlement.
That's a good word. Self-entitlement.
I think he's possibly inherited that from his aunt Margaret, whereas the King and the Prince of Wales have inherited the late Queen's sense of duty
and Duke of Edinburgh's sense of duty.
And the Duke of Edinburgh, well, indeed, yes, yeah. Absolutely, yes, yeah. And I'm actually reading Entitled, the book at the moment, nearly at the end, and I'm thinking, well, fairly pointless finishing it really now.
You mentioned the royal scandal. I don't know how old you are, but I would imagine you were probably around...
60s.
Okay, so you were around when, sadly, the King and late Princess of Wales, they had that divorce, which was pretty seismic. We've had the various Prince Harry episodes. We've had, as Peter Hunt reminded us, they didn't fly the flag at half-mast soon after Diana lost her life. We've had other scandals, one woman having her toes sucked by an American financier. Is this the biggest of the lot? Is this the crowning scandal on the top, the cherry on cherry on the cake?
I think it could be. It could be. It's certainly up there. I think the with regards to Diana's flag flying and that sort of thing, that was a misjudgment on behalf of the Queen, just going down the tradition route. And I think things have changed since then. But if people get their way and Andrew actually appears in court or has to give testimony, then it could really be the top of the tree.
Mark, thank you. What book did you say you're reading, just out of interest, sir? Which one are you reading?
Entitlement, Andrew Lowney's book.
The Andrew Lowney book.
Entitled, sorry.
Right, so that's sitting on a shelf in my office at home. Is it a good read?
It's a good read, yes, but
it needs a new chapter. Mark, thank you for that. When you consider, this is unprecedented, but the last time people had to be removed of the title Prince was in 1917, for those of you not students of history, that was during the First World War, when they were fighting for the wrong side. because, as you know, our royal family tracks back and has a Germanic roots. And two princes were on the wrong side fighting for the Germans, so it was decreed, obviously, they would be stripped of their title of prince. That is the level to which Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has sunk. Let's go a couple of your... Yeah, 7:44. Let's do a couple before we go to news update. This is a clever one from Robert Leake. Allegedly, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was going to kick off when he was told he had to leave the property, but instead they offered him 500 quid, so he went quietly. That's clever, the way you put those two stories. That's very clever. You should be a cartoonist. Same subject. Phil makes an interesting point. Harry and Andrew, both royal outcasts, are the only two of the family who've smelt powder in combat. That means sort of been on the front line. Harry might be rehabilitated despite his irritating flirtation with woke issues and the Oprah interview. He at least radiates sensitivity. Andrew has no such attribute to redeem him and appears stupefyingly dim. I like the word, actually, that Mark... Well, double word, really. Self-entitlement. That's the word I was looking for. Because there is arrogance and there's shocking self-entitlement. But have they gone too far? Are we guilty of dancing on his grave? Or should this action have been taken possibly years ago? And what is it out there? What do the royals know that might be coming down the pipe? We saw the reaction, of course, at the funeral. And then you heard the reaction, if you were listening, when Fiona Bruce made it known to the audience at Question Time in Yorkshire. They broke into instant applause. We'll come back to that. Now, in other news, do you have an autistic child, or, in this case, an autistic adult in your life? This former football Manchester United star does.
He doesn't understand, but he won't know what day of the week it is. He won't know what time it is, but he'll know from what we're doing what day it is.
That's former Manchester United and England ace Paul Scholes. He was on the Stick to Football podcast. He's going to be dropping his broadcasting to look after his son, Aidan. The importance and, of course, the challenges if you have a severely autistic child or children. We'll come to that. It is 7:45, LBC News headlines, then read by Simon Conway.
The family of Virginia Giuffre says she has brought down a prince after the king formally stripped his brother Andrew of his titles, including prince. Sir Keir Starmer's decided Rachel Reeves will face no further action over her failure to apply for a rental licence for her family home, and the UK is to provide an extra £5 million in aid to help the Caribbean recover from Hurricane Melissa. LBC weather mild with a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A30 Egham Bypass remains closed westbound at the Runnymede roundabout. It's following an accident and there are queues on the approach. In central London, Shaftesbury Avenue is closed both ways between Cambridge Circus and Greek Street, and that's following an accident. The Aspen Way is closed eastbound between Canary Wharf and the East India Dock Tunnel, and that's because a car has broken down. In Herne Hill, Loughborough Road is closed in both directions. That's following an accident. And on the underground, so many problems. The Northern Line remains suspended between Nine Elms and Battersea Power Station. No Piccadilly Line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge. And the Metropolitan Line is also part suspended.
This is LBC.
Tesco Finest Alderwood Smoked Bacon. The foundation for the ultimate bacon butty. It's why only the finest bacon is traditionally hand-cured with Cornish sea salt. Delicately smoked over Alderwood and matured for at least 19 days. Layer it between slices of crusty bread and savour its richer flavour. All you have to think about is brown sauce or red. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe. and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
7:49 now. As you've heard on LBC News bulletins, the Met Police say facial recognition cameras have helped arrest over 900 suspected criminals in the last year, and over a quarter of those taken into custody were suspected of violence against women and girls, including rape and domestic abuse. LBC's reporter Joseph Draper has been given exclusive access to police using these cameras in central London.
How would you feel about mobile police cameras scanning your face and thousands of others as you walk through London's Leicester Square?
I don't really see a downside, apart from, like, privacy, but what can they really do with your face? Anyone can take a video walking along the street, so the amount of crime around here, I'm not really surprised at all.
We've been given exclusive access to join officers using this new technology during rush hour.
Well, I've been here for less than 10 minutes speaking to the sergeant running this operation, and already their beeper has gone off. They've run over to a very young man, aged around 20, and arrested him. They're now searching him.
Can you just give us an idea of what he's wanted for, what he's suspected of?
He's wanted for an offence that's classed as a serious offence in alarm bell policy.
A serious offence?
A serious offence.
You can't be any more specific than that.
He could be imprisoned for a year or more for the offence.
That's Sergeant Kev Brown, and he says this is an example of how facial recognition is helping officers to protect the public more effectively when budgets are stretched.
The data would suggest that when we are deployed, that there's a significant decrease in crime in that area at that time during that deployment. The public are reassured by that. It's incredibly precise, it's really accurate, and at a time when resources are stretched, where there are a lot more challenges out there, anything that we can do to make policing that little bit more efficient, to move with the times and actually be ahead of the game on this, has to be a positive.
Facial recognition led to over 900 arrests in the last year, and now the force is set to double its use. More than a quarter of those arrested were suspected of rape, strangulation, and domestic abuse.
Well, even with this new tech, success isn't guaranteed. We've just had an alert. The sergeant rushed over and only to find that the police officers actually let someone go who they shouldn't have. They're now rushing around and appear to have lost him.
The rollout comes as the Met continues to face questions about public trust. Five officers lost their jobs over alleged racism and misogyny after an undercover investigation. And earlier versions of facial recognition misidentified ethnic minorities more than white people. The Met insists that problem's been fixed, but out of 10 people wrongly identified by the cameras in the last year, 8 were black people. The force says it takes each false identification seriously, but that figure could raise fresh concerns about the fairness of facial recognition.
LBC's Joseph Draper with that exclusive report. 7:52. Katie and Bushy, let's talk about Prince Andrew. What should happen now? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I just want to say you're my favourite presenter, and I listen to you every morning.
Can I tell you?
Great.
You're my favourite Katie and Bushy.
Are you?
Yeah, no question about it. No, whenever Thank I you. See any other Katie and Bushy, I think of you.
Well, Nick, you're my favourite. I have to just say that. The point I wanted to sort of just bring up in conversation was, does this, or maybe will this, set a precedent with William being the future king to make a move like this against his brother and sister-in-law?
Now, isn't that interesting?
I'm not comparing the apples with apples, the way it's been Andrew and Harry has behaved. But does this set a precedent that if the current king can do this to his own brother, will William in the future, when he becomes king, could this potentially happen again?
If you listen to what Peter Hunt, who is the royal commentator, he said what this shows is, and you can understand it, that the family, the firm, will do pretty much whatever it takes to preserve the monarchy. So
I agree.
Your point, and let's hope, by the way, I would imagine you're probably going to say the same, I want the King Charles to have a long, long life. But as and when he moves on, I would love to see William and his brother restore a proper fraternal relationship. That would be great, wouldn't it? William and Harry to get on.
It would be, but I think there's been a lot of water under the bridge. And again, you talked about, people talked about forgiveness earlier in the show. Yep. and penitence. I don't know. I mean, we never know what could happen in the future. I think it's an open question at the minute.
When you look at King Charles, I see genuine duty, genuine concern, and a real warmth towards other people. And I'm afraid none of that can I attribute to his brother Andrew.
Oh, I completely agree with that. Completely. I think the Queen, the late Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, was a benchmark in her son, Charles, who yep. knew he would be the heir. And also what we see, I mean, I'm in my 40s, same, I'm literally a few months older than William. Right. And what I see with William and Kate is that same standard of duty and loyalty to serve and to be a monarch, to represent this country. And I'm proud of what William and Kate will look to achieve in the future.
But to continue your point, so there's a massive distinction between we see with King Charles and Brother Andrew. And yet when I see William and Harry, again, I see people who are empathetic, who genuinely have the feelings of the people they meet, and again, who, I will say this, have duty run through them. I see commonality between those two brothers that I don't see between the other two brothers.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think William and Harry were raised very differently to how Andrew was raised by the late Queen and Prince Philip. Different times, different ages, and look at the mother, look at Diana that William had as a standard setter. She always took her sons to places where they could meet people and touch people. Absolutely. Generally from the heart.
Absolutely. Katie, I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Have yourself a happy Halloween, I must say, I suppose. Have yourself a good weekend, and thanks for your kind comments of the show. I must move on, Katie, because I have the benefit of bringing a government minister in with some rather good news, it would appear. So let's go straight to Sir Chris Bryant, Minister for Trade, Labour MP. Also, of course, a former broadcast journalist, although you work for the dark side. So, Chris, you know we have other matters to discuss.
No, that's not true. I've never been a broadcast journalist on anywhere other than LBC.
Oh, is that right? I thought you did BBC training,
no,
I read.
Misinformation.
Misinformation, for the love of all that's holy. Well, you're definitely not. Now, there's some nasty business we have to get out of the way. Should we do nice first and then nasty, or nasty first and then nice? So, Chris Bryant.
Well, can I just do the policy that I'm on to talk about? Would that be a good idea? I don't know.
Oh, so it's the nice question. So, Chris, how have you and your colleagues achieved such success? Good morning.
Look, I'm on to talk about very specific policy, which I think is a good idea, and you're welcoming. I think that's what your tone of voice is saying.
Yes,
Nick, isn't
yes,
it?
£400 million pound saving or something.
£420 million pound saving for critical industries in the UK, like steel, chemicals, glass and cement, who are very intensive in their use of energy. Earlier in the year, we introduced a 60% saving to them on their energy costs. We're now increasing that to 90%. It's going to cost £420 million. I can guarantee that not a single penny of that money will come from consumers' ordinary household bills. We found this out of the Desnes bill, and we'll be producing chapter and verse on that later on today. But it's really good news, because the real danger is that so many of these sectors struggle financially. You know, energy costs in the UK are high. They're higher than some of our competitors in other countries. And the last thing we want is things like steel jobs lost in the UK. So this is a really important part of our industrial strategy, part of our plan for change, to make sure that these industries are strong in the UK.
So what you mentioned this lastly, this is protecting jobs or creating jobs or a bit of both?
It's protecting jobs, but obviously we want...
Have you no idea how many, Sir Chris?
400,000.
Right, wow. And across the whole of the country?
That's across the whole of the country. I mean, I know from my own patch in South Wales, Rhondda and Ogmore, just next door, we've got Port Talbot. Obviously, there are key issues for steel. There are lots of issues for steel. And as Trade Minister, I know some of these because we're dealing with the whole issue around tariffs with the EU and the United States of America. We're glad that we've got the tariff agreement with the United States down from 50% to 25%. It'd be great, obviously, if we could get it even lower than that. But this is a key part of making sure that our steel industry in the UK is competitive and is able to... be strong and survive. We need a strong steel industry in the UK. You could say exactly the same for glass, for cement, for chemicals. And that's why for these energy intensive businesses, we're increasing the compensation from 60% to 90%. As I say, it's worth about £420 million a year.
All right. So, Chris, while there might be doubts about your background, there are none about the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. He was a forensically trained lawyer, I read. So why, when it comes to his colleague, Chancellor Rachel Reeves, when she says that she was ignorant of what was required, why is it now a defence under the law?
It's not a defence under the law.
Well, she said one day she didn't know that she needed a licence, and that was enough on Tuesday night to make the story go away. Now we move on, of course, that her husband did know he needed a licence. So which is it?
Well, as you know, Nick, when I've been on with you about previous stories under a previous government, I always said that it was really important that we had a fair and process for judging.
That is true. You have, in fairness to you, you have. Yes.
And sometimes I've said that I'm sorry. This story, for instance, the first story about Boris Johnson and his Mystique holiday, we acquitted him. We found that there was nothing to be seen there, and we said he hadn't done anything wrong. And what we've got here is we have an independent advisor on ministerial interests who was appointed by Rishi Sunak. He's not a Labour person. Appointed by Rishi Sunak.
Well, he's independent, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he has been given additional powers by Keir Starmer since we came to power. He looked at what Rachel had to say 2 days ago and what she and the new bunch of emails that were found between her husband and the letting agency yesterday. And he reckons that there has been no bad faith. He thinks it's regrettable, obviously, that the original licence wasn't obtained.
Of course.
But I think, I'll just do one little bit more, if that's okay. Okay.
Please.
Which is just to say that, look, what actually happened, Rachel Reeves became Chancellor of the Exchequer. Like every other Chancellor of the Exchequer, she moved into Downing Street and they let out their home through a letting agency. The letting agency have now said that they would get the licence that was required. All the paperwork was ready. They said that they would get the licence that was required, and then they failed to do it.
I hear you, Sir Chris, but her initial defence to the Prime Minister was she didn't know that she needed a licence, and then we discover that her husband had been in communication with the letting agency about that very licence. So which is it?
Yeah, well, I think I understand the confusion about the two different accounts, but the truth is, look, I don't think Rachel Reeves has, and the independent advisor has found this, has acted in bad faith. She came to the Prime Minister as soon as she could. The Prime Minister went to the independent advisor and asked for his advice. He looked at it on the basis of the evidence that he had. The new evidence, it's not stuff that she was hiding from anybody. It actually exonerates her. So
it does, but it would have been easier if
she remembered from the first.
But
sorry,
Sir Chris,
Nick, I missed you there.
Sir Chris, you're right. It both exonerates but contradicts her. Can you hear? I can hear you. I see you're having trouble. Let me go again, Sir Chris.
I heard it.
Okay. It both exonerates and contradicts her, Sir Chris.
Well, that often happens in life, doesn't it? I've often been exonerated and contradicted.
You've never been guilty of anything, Sir Chris. I will not hear it.
I've been guilty of nearly everything in my time.
All right. Should she pay a fine?
Well, I think that's a matter for Southwark Council, and I think, as I understand it, Southwark Council have already said that they're not taking any further action. She's got the appropriate licence now, and I should say, incidentally, that I think that this system is a good system, which is that people should have to have all the proper paperwork that proves that the place is habitable before letting out a property.
Okay. Lastly, with his royal career now over, how should we remember Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, Sir Chris?
I guess I prefer not to remember him at all.
That grave, a series of crimes he denies.
Oh, look, I mean, it's just gone on and on and on.
14 years.
Yes, exactly. And so many different elements to the story. My heart goes out to Virginia Giuffre's family and to all the people who were the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's appalling, despicable behaviours. And I applaud what the King's done today. I think it's the right thing to do. I think the vast majority of of people in the country will go, great, let's close that chapter.
Yeah, I think we saw that with the Question Time audience. So, Chris, thank you. 400,000 jobs saved, £420 million in cash saved, as outlined by Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant here on LBC. 2 minutes after eight, let's get those news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Virginia Giuffre's family say she has brought down a prince after the king stripped his brother Andrew of all his titles. He'll now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and will move out of Royal Lodge, the 30-bedroom mansion in Windsor. Buckingham Palace had faced weeks of intense scrutiny over fresh claims about Andrew's links to Jeffrey Epstein. LBC's royal correspondent Peter Hunt says the monarchy has acted out of fear.
They're not in control of what else might emerge, and I think they're also fearful of too much of MPs starting to ask questions not just about Andrew but also about other aspects of royal life and royal existence, including finances. Certainly from the royal family's point of view, they will hope that they have drawn a line, but I'm not sure that is necessarily the case. And of course, we should remember that this is their fourth attempt since 2019 to try and deal with the toxicity of Andrew's relationship with Epstein.
Andrew continues to deny the allegations against him. The King and Queen say their thoughts and sympathies remain with the victims and survivors of any forms of abuse. The Prime Minister has told Rachel Reeves she faces no further action over the failure to apply for a rental licence for her family home. The letting agent the Chancellor used has apologised for an oversight, but it's emerged her husband did know of the requirement. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC it amounts to astonishing hypocrisy.
It is the Housing Act that Labour brought in 2004 that says that under these regulations, if you have not followed the council guidelines, you are creating a criminal offence. And not just that, Rachel Reeves tweeted 10 days ago saying these were fantastic regulations. She likes to see them in her constituency. She wants to see it extended. And then it turns out that it hasn't applied to her.
The UK is to provide an additional £5 million in emergency humanitarian funding for the Caribbean after Hurricane Melissa. At least 49 people are known to have died in several countries. The Metropolitan Police says live facial recognition technology has led to more than 900 arrests in the last year. More than a quarter of those held were suspected of violence against women and girls. And the most energy-intensive businesses are to receive more support with their electricity costs. The government's confirmed the discounts on network charges for sectors like steel and glass will increase from 60% to 90%. In the city, the FTSE 100 is about to reopen at 97.60 after closing up 3 points yesterday, and the pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a mild day with rain slowly clearing the southeast this morning. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers with strong winds in the west, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £65 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's Euro Millions jackpot is £65 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
7 minutes after eight after my extended interview with Sir Chris Bryant, although in reality he was actually running a bit late. So let's get straight into our conversation. I'll merely say, of course, we will return to the biggest story of the day, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as he is now known. But let's go to other matters. And this would have been the biggest story, save for last night's royal developments. This is now, of course, the report concerning Rachel Reeves, who was last night reprimanded by the Prime Minister after admitting she'd misled him over her failure to get a licence to rent out her home. The Chancellor backtracking on previous claims that she and her husband were unaware they needed a licence to rent out their property in Dulwich, South London, after evidence came to light. Now, you may recall, and my colleagues here can vouch for the fact, that around this time yesterday, we did everything we could. And one of my colleagues tracked down the letting agency very quickly, and we were ringing them, and they declined to come on the show, because every journalistic ounce in my body knew the story would revolve around that letting agency. I think from memory they're called Harvey and Wheeler, but don't quote me, and it doesn't really matter. But that was going to be the key. What was the exchange? And what you know now, and it couldn't be more simple than this. It couldn't be more simple than this. When the issue first came up, the Chancellor said, I didn't know I need a licence. Despite actually supporting the idea in her constituency in Leeds of these licences, I didn't know I need one. And then the second day, when the story starts again, a little bit more weight rumbling down the hill with the work of the Daily Mail, we find out that her husband had been in contact, and she then says, ah, you see, it was the company's fault, because the person who should have done it quit surprisingly on the Friday, and they never picked it up on the following Monday. Is that enough? Has she put her house in order over this rental row? Not for one person.
I don't know that she is in the clear. And it's been fascinating watching Labour, you know, lurch from one place to another. Let's remember, Keir Starmer said lawmakers shouldn't be lawbreakers. And he was very happy to chase every fixed penalty notice that occurred under the Conservatives. What Rachel Reeves looks like she has done is a criminal offence. It is the Housing Act that Labour brought in 2004 that says that under these regulations, if you have not followed the council guidelines, you are creating a criminal offence. And not just that, Rachel Reeves tweeted 10 days ago saying these were fantastic regulations. She likes to see them in her constituency. She wants to see it extended. And then it turns out that it hasn't applied to her. I think that is astonishing. This is where an investigation is necessary.
Now, in the last 20 minutes or so of the show, I spoke with Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant. I asked him for some clarity around, did the Chancellor know she needed a licence or didn't she?
Well, as you know, Nick, when I've been on with you about previous stories under a previous government, I always said that it was really important that we had a fair and process for judging.
That is true. You have. In fairness to you, you have, yes.
And sometimes I've said that, I'm sorry, this story, for instance, the first story about Boris Johnson and his Mystique holiday, we acquitted him. We found that there was nothing to be seen there, and we said he hadn't done anything wrong. And what we've got here is we have an independent advisor on ministerial interests who was appointed by Rishi Sunak. He's not a Labour person. Appointed by Rishi Sunak.
Well, he's independent, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he has been given additional powers by Keir Starmer since we came to power. He looked at what Rachel had to say 2 days ago and what she and the new bunch of emails that were found between her husband and the letting agency yesterday. And he reckons that there has been no bad faith. He thinks it's regrettable, obviously, that the original license wasn't obtained.
Of course.
But I think, sorry, Nick, I'll just do one little bit more if that's okay. Okay.
Please.
Which is just to say that, look, what actually happened, Rachel Reeves became Chancellor of the Exchequer. Like every other Chancellor of the Exchequer, she moved into Downing Street and they let out their home through a letting agency. The letting agency have now said that they would get the licence that was required. All the paperwork was ready. They said that they would get the licence that was required, and then they failed to do it.
I hear you, Sir Chris, but her initial defence to the Prime Minister was she didn't know that she needed a licence, and then we discover that her husband had been in communication with the letting agency about that very licence. So which is it?
Yeah, well, I think I understand the confusion about the two different accounts. But the truth is, look, I don't think Rachel Reeves has, and the independent advisor has found this, has acted in bad faith. She came to the Prime Minister as soon as she could. The Prime Minister went to the independent advisor and asked for his advice. He looked at it on the basis of the evidence that he had. The new evidence, it's not stuff that she was hiding from anybody. It actually exonerates her. So
It would have been easier if
she remembered from the first.
But
sorry,
Sir Chris,
Nick, I missed you there.
Sir Chris, you're right. It both exonerates but contradicts her. Can you hear? I can hear you. I see you're having trouble. Let me go again, Sir Chris.
I heard it.
Okay. It both exonerates and contradicts her, Sir Chris.
Well, that often happens in life, doesn't it? I've often been exonerated and contradicted.
You've never been guilty of anything, Sir Chris. I will not hear it.
I've been guilty of nearly everything in my time.
The fairly bullish Sir Chris Bryant there. Let's bring into the conversation 12 after 8, Kevin Craig, who's founder and chief executive of the public relations agency, PLMR, former Labour candidate and expert in political communications. Is there a story to see here in your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. There isn't. And I think I fully respect elite media, and that is what you are to do your job of holding the political class to account. But my point really is somebody that has campaigned alongside Rachel and spoke alongside her, and I know her to be a really honest public servant, is I want to say to the public and other media outlets, it's time we started giving the political class a break. And I mean that for all politicians, okay? I feel like we're sometimes trapped in a doom loop of trying to catch out the political class on the slightest infraction where there's no criminal intent. And like your job, being in the cabinet, being a member of parliament, relentless hours, sometimes they will get their admin, their private admin wrong. My personal view, because I can speak without accountability for the government, I'm not an MP, is that when the Chancellor first gave that answer, she was moving at 1,000 miles an hour with the budget in 3 weeks and the admin of the property had been left to her husband. But can we please start to have faith?
Kevin, yeah. If there's nothing to see here, A, why has the Prime Minister reprimanded her? B, why has he described it as, quotes, clearly regrettable that she didn't do a deep trawl or deep dive? And C, why didn't she just ring her husband and say, can you tell me what happened with the licence in Dulwich?
Because life is just, in my experience of trying to have many, many things on the go at 1,000 miles an hour, these things happen. But hang on, if I can just say, but the important thing is that in this, under this new government, the ethics advisor you've talked about today has been brought on board. There are higher standards. And I hear you, and you could hear the way the Sir Chris there couldn't quite get into it, because you did make a good question about why she'd said that misleading answer. I hear that. Yeah, yeah. But what I want to say is, and I address this to Kemi as well, because she was getting on her high horse there, and I don't want to get into the ding-dong of it, but I just think that we need to give politicians the benefit of the doubt.
Lastly, if I don't file my correct tax return and I don't make the correct payment, and I say, well, I was very busy actually, and I was getting married this year, which is true, I was busy getting married and whatever else it might be, they're not going to say, oh gosh, Nick, of course, don't worry about it, ignorance is defence in the law, are they? They're going to say, no, we need your money and we're going to fine you. Why should she be any different?
Well, she isn't, but in due course, all of those things would have been resolved. It's just the way it was brought into to the public domain, and accusations about bad faith were brought forward. And what I know about her is a really person of the highest integrity, but this is not party political, Nick, because in the next time, it could be a Tory or a Reform or a Green or a Lib Dem. Right. Please, can we give the political class the benefit of the doubt more as they try and make this country better?
Kevin Craig is founder and chief executive of the public relations agency PLMR and a former Labour candidate, and knows Rachel Reeves well. Kevin, thank you for your time. You talk about the political class while you hear from one of the best political commentators in the business, Dan Hodges. He has a very different view. You'll hear Dan after the 8:15 LBC News headlines, read by Simon Conway.
A government minister's told Nick he applauds the King's decision to strip his brother Andrew of his titles, including Prince. Rachel Reeves has been told she'll face no further action over the failure to obtain a rental licence for her family home, and Britain's to provide an additional £5 million in emergency humanitarian funding for the Caribbean after Hurricane Melissa. LBC weather, mild with a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Aspen Way is closed eastbound from the Canary Wharf exit to the East India Dock Tunnel, and that's because a car's broken down inside the tunnel. There are lengthy delays back onto the A13 and the Limehouse Link Tunnel. Also, problems in Herne Hill. The Loughborough Road is closed in both directions following an accident, and that's causing delays. In central London, Shaftesbury Avenue remains closed both ways between Cambridge Circus and Greek Street whilst the investigation works take place. On the Underground, still no Northern Line from Nine Elms to Battersea Power Station. Also no Piccadilly Line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge. And the Metropolitan Line stays suspended between Baker Street and Aldgate. And there are minor delays on the rest of the line.
This is LBC.
Hello, I'm a National Lottery scratch card. Over five people a second win with me. Ooh. That's like 30 winners since I started talking. Oh, 12 more. 14. 21!
Is there a win in store for you? Play a National Lottery scratch card today. Winners is an average search. Dream big, play small. Rules apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Trying to put her house in order. Let's go straight to Dan Hodges, who's political commentator in the Mail on Sunday, but has a punchy piece in today's Daily Mail and joins me now. And your intro, you seek to remind us of what Rachel Reeves made of supposedly egregious events by a former chancellor. Remind the listeners of how your piece starts today. Dan, good morning.
Morning. Yes, when Rishi Sunak was shown to have inadvertently broken COVID rules by turning up for a meeting with Boris Johnson, not realising a surprise party was being held for him, and was then handed a piece of cake and was fined for that, Rachel Reeves said that on a point of principle, Rishi Sunak had broken the law and Rishi Sunak had to resign because she said there couldn't be one rule for the people making laws and another rule for everyone else. And we see the direct contrast between that and what's happened in this instance. I mean, the facts are these. Rachel Reeves has broken the law. Rachel Reeves misled the Prime Minister, his ethics advisor, and the country about why she broke the law. It's a serious law. It's a criminal offence to break this law. And as we know, in opposition, Rachel Reeves, Keir Starmer and the Labour Party were absolutely vicious in condemning every single breach of the regulations or any sort of breach of public propriety by their political opponents.
The argument that she's a busy individual and the fact that it is actually Harvey and Wheeler, the agency that have fallen down on the job here, what do we take from that, Dan?
But that wasn't the explanation she gave. And the argument...
Not day one, certainly, no.
No, exactly. And the argument she's a busy individual, she was approached by the media on a major issue of relevance to the public. She's the chancellor. She knows the political sensitivities about this. But crucially, she was asked or felt the need to provide an explanation to the Prime Minister and his ethics advisor. And that explanation was completely, completely false.
What happens next with this story?
I frankly don't think it's over yet, because there are still a number of questions for Reeves to answer. I mean, we now know she did request the licence, so why wasn't it chased? The licence required her to pay a fee. Why did she not wonder why the fee hadn't been taken out of her account? And why has there not actually been a proper investigation into all of this, given we know that Reeves started off this saga by directly misleading the Prime Minister and his ethics advisor?
Dan Hodges, political commentator of the Mail on Sunday. But as I say, punchy piece in today's Daily Mail. Thanks for your input. 8:22 is the time. Justin in Purley. Anything to see here, Justin? Morning.
Well, good morning. Wow, that was fantastic. Thanks ever so much, Dan Hodges. And why are we chasing down somebody who's already proved that it wasn't anything to do with her?
Well, because she's received a reprimand from the Prime Minister for misleading him on day one of the story.
Well, that's because she didn't know the full facts.
Well, hold on. You don't pay your tax. You get your tax return wrong this year, and you get contacted by HMRC, and you say, I was busy, I didn't know the full facts. Do you think they're going to say, oh, Justin, I'm so sorry, of course?
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that, because I don't deal with that. My accountant deals with that one.
Well, presumably you do make payments, don't you?
They do it automatically. Well, my accountant, by the way, is my wife. My wife also deals with everything else. And when it comes down to it, I don't deal with anything in my house. My wife deals with it. So what I'm looking at here is I'm looking at possibly bad communication between husband and wife.
I'm sorry to talk over you, sir. No. It's misrepresentation of the truth to the Prime Minister. Oh, what's this story about needing a... Sorry, Prime Minister, I didn't know I needed a licence. That was Wednesday. Thursday, it's not me, Prime Minister. My husband was trying to get the licence with the agency.
Yeah.
They're not the two same stories, Justin.
Well, what's happened there is she's reacted to a question via the Daily Mail, probably, about a situation that's going on. She's reacted, and then she's gone home and had a conversation with her husband.
So it's all right to mislead the ethics advisor, is it, if you're busy?
Well, it's not misleading, to be quite honest.
No, it is absolutely misleading. As the Prime Minister said, it's, quote, deeply regrettable that you didn't do a deeper dive into it all, because she didn't. She said, I didn't know I needed a licence, and she did.
Well,
you can't get off it, Justin. Best wishes to your wife. Good luck with the books. Jenny in Horsham, you're on the radio. Jenny.
Hi, Nick. I think it's the ethics advisor issue that's key here, in the sense, what point is there in having an ethics advisor if, when the ethics advisor finds that he's been given misinformation that's then contradicted by the person who gave him the subject of the inquiry, how can he not go back over that and say, actually, you told me this yesterday, now you're showing me something else? I mean, this is just a farce. What are we supposed to think?
Well, where it sticks in my craw is that I've had the opportunity to read the papers this morning, and there are cases of people, landlords, who've been fined £10,000.
Of course. People have been on the radio for the last 24 hours. Yeah. It's such a huge amount of money for us ordinary people.
Absolutely.
And by her own admission, she said one thing one day and one thing the other. And the fact that people don't want to use the word liar, I don't know what we call it, the two pieces of information are completely... One contradicts the other. That's crystal clear, isn't it?
Lastly, when people say there's no story here, what would you say to them, Jenny?
I think we're used to being told that, aren't we?
We probably are. Jenny, thank you. Jason in Bushy. Jason, is there a story here?
No.
Why has the Prime Minister reprimanded her then?
Well, because she's got to show... Because everybody is screaming after him. I've never voted Labour, by the way.
Okay.
But everybody, yourself included, I'm giving everybody in this government such a hard time.
Well, they've been doing the same to the country. You wait till next month's budget.
Okay, look, she made a mistake. But the point
sorry. She didn't make a mistake. Day one, Wednesday, I didn't know I needed a licence. Thursday, my husband was dealing with the licence. That's not making a mistake. I say again, you and I wouldn't be treated like this.
That's just a normal family. That's just a normal family.
Okay.
I imagine he was sleeping on the sofa last night.
Yeah, maybe if it's not let, he'll be down in Dulwich possibly last night. But again, if this was your, I don't know if you run a business, your quarterly VAT return, then the HMRC is not going to take that as an excuse. I was busy and I didn't ask my husband.
Okay, one, I do run businesses. Secondly, yes, if you make a mistake or if you do something wrong, you get fined. So she's now paid the license.
Just for journalistic fact, she's applying for it. She hasn't paid yet because it hasn't been granted.
Okay, but the council have turned around and said that as long as she applies and pays for it, they're going to be fine with it. And I've had that with HMRC because they seem to be a lot better these days than they used to be. They're a lot more helpful.
Good.
But the point is, it was her husband. You know, he made the mistake, not her.
Well, she could, of course, always give him a call. Thank God she's not in a position of responsibility, like running the accounts of the country. Jason, good luck with your business. Mike simply says, I prosecuted a landlord for the same thing. He was fined £80,000. And this is from the horse's mouth. Same subject. Stuart says, if police officers do something wrong, they're made an example of. With this, it seems politicians get a pass because of who they are. She should be fined. And if she wants to take that up with the letting agent, then so be it. Ian in Bovey Tracy. Ian in Devon, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. No, I think both of these headline non-stories almost could be eliminated by Prince Andrew moving into Rachel Reeves' house for free rent. It would be a win-win situation.
Or we give him a 500 quid bung just on the
and
way.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And perhaps a round trip to Sudan. I don't know.
Well done. That's very funny. Lastly, I've got to ask you, is this a story in your view?
Oh, I think there are no major earthquakes, no huge disasters, no great plane crashes. So this is just the result of politicians who have compasses which just continually circle. So
all their compasses point south, probably. Ian, thank you. Nice line. Chandra in Newcastle. How much of a story is this in your book, Chandra?
Good morning, Nick. This is a major, major story because she holds the second most powerful job in the country.
She does.
With a single stroke of a pen, she can change the fate of businesses and tens of thousands of businesses and families in the land. If she's not capable of taking financial responsibility for her own household, how are we supposed to trust her judgment with a nearly £4 trillion economy of this country?
Yeah,
I think this is a massive failure in judgment and arguing. Labour supporters, I have always voted Labour. I am at the opposite end of your political spectrum. I don't always agree with what you, some of the positions you take.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not to do with politics. This is about ordinary lives and political lives.
Chandra, thank you. Coming up to the news, Chandra, have a good weekend. More calls on this. But coming up after the news, a massacre at a maternity hospital leaves 460 people dead. I don't want anyone dead anywhere, but you can imagine if it was a tenth of that in Gaza, well, they'd have taken to the streets by now. But this happens in the Sudan, so why does no one seem to care?
Where is the liberal outrage? We cannot have a hierarchy of conflict with this conflict at the bottom.
David Lammy, the then Foreign Secretary, now Deputy Prime Minister. And doesn't this show that for a lot of the people, not all, who go on those marches, probably this weekend, pro-Palestinian, anti-Zionist marches, is fuelled merely by anti-Semitism. That's the reality. We'll look at that in more detail. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar on LBC. News time, Simon Conway.
A government minister has told Nick he applauds the King's decision to strip his brother Andrew of all his titles, including Prince. He'll now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and will also move out of the 30-bedroom mansion where he's lived rent-free. He continues to deny allegations of sexual assault. Rachel Reeves has been told by Keir Starmer that she will face no further action for failing to apply for a rental licence for her family home. Trade Minister Chris Bryant has told Nick that the Chancellor did not act in bad faith. The UK is to provide a further £5 million in aid recovery for Caribbean countries hit by Hurricane Melissa. A specialist rapid deployment teams arrived in Jamaica to provide consular assistance to British nationals. LBC weather, mild with rain slowly clearing the southeast. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents,
we're going to explore why British military hardware is turning up on the battlefields of Sudan. What does that tell us about the way we are trading arms with certain countries in the Middle East? And are we inadvertently helping to fuel a genocide?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Oh! Hey, Mum, looks like someone's coming through the back gate.
Oh, it's not Barbara from Judo again, is it? I can't listen to any more about her new boiler.
Or about the time she saw a ghost in her downstairs loo.
No, it's okay, look. It's just a dodgy-looking bloke in a hoodie.
Oh, thank God.
Hey, you, clear off.
We know Judo. Always Know is at your door with Ring's new 4K security cameras. Available now at ring.com and Amazon.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
8.33. Back to events here. Trying to put her house in order. Chancellor Rachel Reeves. It's an absolute split, by the way. Some of you saying that I'm just continuing to push this on the sake of the Conservatives and I'm getting desperate and it's hilarious, the desperation you hear in my voice. Others saying that it is quite important if the Chancellor Exchequer changes her story in the case of 24 hours. And for those of you who don't see a story, why would there be a reprimand from the Prime Minister if there was no wrongdoing? He's very tight with his Chancellor, understandably. He's not going to send her a note saying her actions are deeply regrettable. Is he? We'll come back to that. Now, here's something that's more than deeply regrettable. It's horrific. When I saw it on the news wires yesterday, a penny seemed to drop. There was a horrific massacre. All massacres are horrific, by the way, but this was at a maternity hospital in Sudan. 460 people were killed, with the World Health Organization saying the Saudi maternity hospital in El Fasha, which is the city's last remaining hospital, was attacked for the fourth time in a month, killing one nurse and injuring three other health workers. And as I read that yesterday afternoon, I thought, there are shades of what we see, tragically, in the Middle East, sometimes in Gaza here. So where is the moral outrage? Why aren't people taking to the streets tomorrow? Why haven't they been taking to the streets for months, as they have regarding the Palestinian area? Or is it actually, in reality, in most, not all, or certainly in too many cases, fueled by anti-Semitism? Let's go back. When David Lammy was Foreign Secretary, now he's called Deputy Prime Minister, was in Sudan back in January and put this on his social media page.
Over Sudan's border, just behind me, its people are suffering the biggest humanitarian catastrophe on the planet.
I just sat with a woman who showed me the burn marks. She had been burnt by soldiers. She had been beaten and she had been raped.
Where is the liberal outrage? We cannot have a hierarchy of conflict, with this conflict at the bottom.
To Jake Wallace-Simons, Daily Telegraph columnist, joins me now. Jake, thanks for coming on the show. What does this say to you about lack of demos concerning the plight of the Sudanese, but the never-ending stream of demos about events in the Middle East? Good morning.
Good morning. I think it really says that the hundreds of thousands of people that take to the streets week in, week out, ostensibly in support of Gaza and Palestine, actually have very little regard for the sufferings of the Palestinians. I mean, that was shown also that when the ceasefire came in and Hamas began to kill Palestinians, nobody cared about that. It's not about that. It's about something else. It's about politics here. It's about an anti-Israel, anti-Western, anti-British stance, which radical progressives and Islamists and others like to demonstrate on the streets. It's not about the real world, I think. It's about something here. And we see that very, very clearly at the moment when a far greater tragedy is unfolding in Darfur. 150,000 people killed so far. According to some estimates, hundreds of thousands of children starved already, and nobody seems to care.
The Prime Minister, the current Home Secretary and her predecessor all say that anti-Semitism will not be tolerated and every action will be taken to try and expunge it. Is that the reality on the streets, Jake?
I'm afraid we've seen anti-Semitism snowballing ever since October the 7th to the present day. And the Prime Minister makes statements from time to time, but has done very little actually substantially to stop it. He said the other day that from the river to the sea, which is a common chant on these marches, was unequivocally anti-Semitic. And yet that's the main chant that's been heard on our streets by hundreds of thousands of people, chanted hundreds of thousands, even millions of times over the past 2 years. And he's allowed it to carry on. So he isn't really putting his money where his mouth is. I think that, again, the genocide in Sudan that's unfolding before our eyes, all over social media, if you look for it, you can find the most horrific, not that I'd recommend it, the most horrific examples of torture, rape, execution, people being buried alive and so on. You know, this stuff really matters. And yet the activists are not concerned with that. They're just concerned with Israel and the Jews.
How confident are you the ceasefire will hold in the Middle East, lastly, Jake?
Well, that's a huge question, and I'm not all that confident. Hamas clearly is still in some power in Gaza and bent upon violence as ever. And I just hope that the local regional powers can come and get behind this plan and try to suppress Hamas and end this once and for all. But I think from Israel's point of view, at least the living hostages are out.
Jake Wallace-Simons is a Telegraph columnist. He also wrote Never Again, How the West Betrayed the Jews and Itself. Grateful for your input. If you've got views on that, because they will, I'm sure, turn out in some of, probably in London and some of our major cities, and many of them for all the right reasons, wanting an end to the deaths on both sides. But let's be honest with each other. 460 people die at a maternity hospital. Nobody says a word. The horrific events we've seen on both sides, and thousands take to the streets. We'll have more on that in a moment. Rachel Reeves is dominating the conversation this hour, though. Jo's got an interesting one, who, by the way, she says is a female, Jo brackets F, as in female. If Rachel Reeves was a man, would she be expected to be in total charge of her domestic admin in the same way? Is she, as a woman, being held to a higher standard and still expected to 100% run the home as well as her career? I smell sexism. Do you know, I think it's the absolute opposite way, Jo. It's almost like, oh, I'm just the little lady. I let my husband deal with all these big things like licenses. He's in charge. He deals with these, what are they, letting agents? I see it the other way. And by the way, Jo, she's Chancellor of the Exchequer, the second most powerful politician in the country. Elaine says, I bet Ms. Reeves is happy the heat is mostly on Andrew today, but the media needs to stay on her. Let's speak with Richard in Finsbury Park. Richard, what do you make of this story? Good morning.
Hi, Nicholas. Well, there are two things here. First of all, what would have happened had the Daily Mail not pursued this? Because clearly the lettings agency had forgotten all about it.
They had,
And clearly Ms. Reeves was at the due on Wednesday. Well, I don't need a licence anyway, so the whole thing could have gone on. So she could have been breaking the law, effectively, in perpetuity. And secondly, I understand that the person dealing with things at the letting agency has lost his job.
He resigned, and that's what caused the problem.
Yes, but doesn't that go to the heart of it? He's effectively been put under a position where he's had to go
He's handling the Reeves case, which isn't, by the way, the last name is Joyce, but he's handling this case. He leaves the job for another job on Friday, and no one picks it up on Monday. That was the reality of it. So it's not like he was forced out.
Oh, I see.
No, that's all right, Richard. That's my job. Richard, thank you for your input on that. You're right. Had the Mail, Daily Mail, never pursued it, we might never have known. They could be going on it forever. Alan's in Pagham. Alan, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I've got a couple of issues, although, like, with this story regarding, like, the permit with the Chancellor. Whenever I've rented a property, at the end of that transaction, you receive a statement or an invoice, yes?
I don't rent out property, but I'm sure you're right, so, yeah, go ahead.
From the estate agent. So okay. Everything on there is itemised.
Right.
So that £800 or £900 for the permit, which they thought they had purchased, would have been on that statement. Right. And the fact that it wasn't is proof that the permit was not in place.
Right.
So in my eyes, they must have known for a fact that that permit was not purchased. If they've known that for 12 months, if it had been me or anybody else, we would have been fined by the council the 12 months rental penalty. So I just don't believe that they didn't know the permit was not in place, because it would have
been... Sorry, when you say you mean the agency or the family?
No, sorry, the Chancellor, the family.
I do think they didn't know. I can allow that you're moving at such... Pardon me, well, you don't pay 900 in one go, do you, apparently? You pay 640 in the initial, and then the remaining 260 is levied sometime on. And bear in mind, and I'm reading this from the paper, you're spending 150 for an EHCR, you'll know what this is, the eco certificate you have there. You're doing 100 and something plus VAT for your gas boiler certificate. So it's going out all the time, and your statement, I would imagine your statement's coming in, and the 3,000 quid is dropping into your bank account, minus whatever it is for handling. Are you really going to examine it that much, Alan? What do you think? I don't rent out properties. You obviously do. What do you think?
Well, I suppose then it depends on how much you value £640, whether you can afford that money to notice it not be on the invoice.
Well, again, I don't know. You would imagine that they are fairly well-heeled. I think it's a detached house in Dulwich, so that's not going to come cheap. It's rented out at £3,250, which, again, is not cheap. But I hear what you say. But I think, in reality, that does track back to Harvey and Wheeler, the agency who should have done more. Alan, thank you for your point. Let's talk Sudan. because no one seems to want to demonstrate about it, and yet getting on for 500 people were massacred at a maternity hospital. Tom's in Maidstone on that. Tom, why is there appear to be a lack of interest in this story? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. Nick, I'm a long-time listener, and especially since October 7th, I've been glued to your RBC non-stop. You guys have done a tremendous job covering what's happening in the Middle East. And I do see a lot of these marches as being anti-Semitic, pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel. A lot of them, not everyone, but a lot of them.
Yep.
But one of the things that came in the conflict in the Middle East was the issue of proportionality on the Israeli side. So my question to you, as a journalist, why hasn't Sudan been covered enough in the media? I know it's not covered in the streets, but I rarely hear you guys talk about Sudan. Why is that?
Because if you're the editor of a newspaper or you're editing bulletins, your job, and it's a fairly tough one at times, is to put the stories that get the most interest. And if you see thousands of people taking to the streets of this country almost every weekend over a certain issue, and you've only got room, and I hate saying this, but you've asked me as a journalist, and you've only got room to cover one global conflict in that particular bulletin or in that particular edition of a newspaper, you're going to go to the one that excites the most interest.
But don't you think maybe that if you were to talk about it more, then maybe this will drive people to the streets?
By the very nature that, as I look at the board now, there is a degree of interest in what you and I are talking about. But if we were talking about Gaza or Israel, you wouldn't be able to get a line into the building. It tells me everything that you need to know. And that's the reality. For whatever reason, Sudan does not excite the same level of interest as events in the Middle East. And I put it to you, that's because you've got, in the eyes of some, not me, the ogre of Israel involved.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that is very much the case.
All right, matey, thank you. And again, I'm sorry, but Tom asked me a question as a journalist, and it is a very tough at times. I mean, for instance, editing a paper, which I have done, but not last night. You know, you've got one poor guy who's died in a helicopter crash in Doncaster, which is a horrific story. You've got an ongoing court case about alleged sexual activity of a pretty gross nature at London's Charing Cross Station. They are fighting for space in a newspaper. And in some newspapers, I don't think the sex offenders even, the alleged sex offender, I don't think it's even got in the newspapers. So, and I don't mean this nasty, because until you try and do it, it does seem an incredibly easy job. How hard is it to edit the Daily Mirror? You've got all those pages to fill. Unbelievably, sometimes, it's really hard. Wouldn't have been hard last night, with two great stories bouncing around, which is, of course, the decision made by the King, and the plight of Rachel Reeves. But there are other days when, as Havin can tell you, I've done it, it was damn tough. All right, we'll come back to our conversation about the Chancellor. We're coming back to the Royals, I promise you, or the Royal, former Royal, actually. Andrew, formerly known as Prince. But are you perhaps getting into gear for an electric car? Here in my car, I feel safest of all. I can lock all my doors. It's the only way to live in cars. Well, I'll be giving you news after the news that might make you want to apply the handbrake. Stay tuned. 8:45, LBC News Headlines. Simon Conway.
The family of Virginia Giuffre says she has brought down a prince after the king formally stripped his brother Andrew of his titles, including prince. Sir Keir Starmer's decided Rachel Reeves will face no further action over her failure to apply for a rental licence for her family home. And the Metropolitan Police says live facial recognition technology has led to more than 900 arrests in the last year. LBC weather mild with a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Aspen Way has reopened eastbound at the Preston's Road flyover, but it's still very slow back onto the A13. Also, the problems continue in central London at Shaftesbury Avenue. It's closed both ways between Cambridge Circus at the Charing Cross Road and Greek Street. It's because of an ongoing investigation. The A10 is slow southbound in Enfield down to Carter Hatch Lane. That was after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. On the Underground, still no Northern Line from Nine Elms to Battersea Power Station. The Piccadilly line remains suspended between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge, and no Metropolitan line running between Baker Street and Aldgate. Then there are minor delays on the rest of the line.
LBC.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £65 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's EuroMillions jackpot is £65 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires.
Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Summer sorted. Book a Jet2 holiday now and take your pick of our best rooms, flights and hotels. Go get 22 kilograms of baggage included and right now there's £120 off per couple with MyJet2. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person and lock in the price for next summer. Jet2 holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Up to national protective. Subject to availability and conditions.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
11 minutes before nine. Now, if I was to ask you, how far off does 2030 seem? What are you going to say? Well, if you're a child and you can't wait until Christmas, it seems like probably another century. But if you're slightly on in years, genuinely, it's not that far away. So what of the target to ban sale of new fully petrol diesel cars from 2030? And take it up on the other side, electric cars. I mean, there's a hefty grant, and we all know it's good for the planet, but what's the reality? Earlier this month, I was fortunate enough to attend an awards ceremony, the London Press Club, where it was addressed by Robert Forrester, who's CEO of Vertu Motors, that's V-E-R-T-U, Vertu Motors, one of the nation's largest automotive retailers, and he made some punchy points, so I asked him to come on. He joins me now. Mr. Forrester, thanks for coming on the show. I trust you're well, and as I told you when we met, there's a huge number of folk listening to this show who are on the go, even as we speak. They're in their cars and their vans, so the points you made were very pertinent for them. Just go over what you thought. As with most things in life, there's a mixed message of what's going on here. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, motorists and the drivers in their vans and cars this morning will know that the car is probably the most taxed thing in the country. And we're in the middle of a vice of taxation and regulation. There are numerous taxes and they're going up on cars. And we've got an electrification agenda where the government is setting wholly unrealistic targets to move the new car and the van market, actually, to electrified battery electric vehicles. The targets are completely unrealistic. They're putting an immense amount of pressure on the whole automotive sector, from parts providers to car factories to retailers. And there's going to be a crunch, and it's going to come again next year when we see rationing of petrol and diesel cars.
Right, we'll talk rationing in a moment. Robert, in what way, and you've said this twice, Robert, in what way are they wholly unrealistic?
Well, the target for next year is that 33% of all new cars sold in the UK will have to be fully battery electric vehicles. Not hybrids, just fully battery electric vehicles. The current run rate, and as you said, the government have put grants in place recently, the current run rate's about 23%. We are a country mile away from getting to 33%, and no one in the industry can see a way of getting there. And this is going to have implications of us holding back on petrol and diesel sales. Last year we saw it a bit with people could see the car on the forecourt. We weren't allowed to actually deliver the cars. We'll see that again next year. And we'll see real problems for the manufacturers in trying to make money because they're having to discount battery electric vehicles to an unending degree.
What does it mean for my listeners? What does it mean for your customers? What does it mean for the motor trade, the salesmen and women, the people who build the parts, deliver the parts? It's a massive industry in the United Kingdom.
Well, it employs nearly a million people. Actually, all told, the automotive sector, it's a massive part of our economy. The issue is the new car market is in a very, very poor place. Last year was the lowest car sales for private customers for 25 years. The industry actually sold less private new cars than we did during COVID when we were closed, which does take some believing. And I can see next year being difficult because we've got to try and get to this 33% or close to it. And I think that's going to potentially depress the new car market. For the listeners, they'll have some very, very good deals on battery electric vehicles. But if they want petrol and diesel cars, they may find themselves at the other end of rationing.
Yeah, give me a bit more on rationing, if you would, Robert. That's the second time you mentioned that.
Yeah, well, we end up with a situation where it's a percentage target. And if the manufacturer misses the percentage target, it's 33%, they have to pay a £12,000 fine per car that they go over.
£12,000 a car?
Actually, the government have been very good to us, actually. It was £15,000 last year, so they've reduced it to £12,000. Now, if you're faced with a fine of £12,000 or not selling a car and you don't make £12,000 as a manufacturer, you probably won't sell the car. So we'll see probably holding back on supply of petrol and diesel cars to try and get to these percentages on behalf of the manufacturers to try and avoid fines. And that will affect the salesman in the dealership. And we've had this for a couple of years now where it's fine having an electric vehicle if you've got your own driveway and a private charging point. But actually mass adoption needs two things: affordable electric vehicles, which in fairness are coming, and also a means of charging it without using public charging points, which are frightfully expensive.
They want 2030. You're in the game. Your firm, Virtue Motors, is very big in the game. What is the realistic target? What should they be looking at, Robert?
Well, to be honest with you, the Europeans have got this more right than we have, which is broadly unusual, which is they're looking at 2035, but they're actually in consultation with the manufacturers to move that further out. If this was left to a free market, we will all end up with electric vehicles within 15 years. This is just a question of speed and pace and not destroying swathes of the industry in the meantime.
Lastly, I'm going back to be talking about Rachel Reeves putting her house in order with a rental issue in just a moment, but let's focus on her events later this month again for you and for the car industry. What would you like to hear in a budget? What would you dread to hear with, I imagine, the many people that you employ? I have no idea what national insurance meant to you.
National insurance and the minimum wage last year cost the group potentially £10 million from April onwards, annualised. I'd like a budget that I don't have to care about, i.e. I'm not worried about what's in it, and the customers aren't worried about what's in it, and that's not the situation today. The country needs economic growth, and unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to get it. So we'll be monitoring taxation on vehicles. We'll be monitoring, clearly, employment taxes, which hopefully we're not going to see any more of that, because that had a big impact on us. And certainly there's been talk around the motability scheme and putting VAT and insurance premium tax on that, and that would be very significant for the whole UK automotive sector.
Enjoyed our time together. Robert Forrester, thank you. Your CEO of Virtue Motors, V-E-R-T-U, Virtue Motors, one of the nation's largest automotive retailers. 529 is the time. Let's come back to Rachel Reeves as regards her housing issues or rentals. Ryan in Caerphilly. Gosh, a week ago, the world and its mistress was in Caerphilly, weren't they, Ryan? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. You all right?
Yeah, good, thank you. What do you think happens now to Rachel Reeves?
I think... From my point, it was more, let's go back like 2 months ago. Andrew Rayner got sacked for not the exact same issue, but it was very much a thing of she'd broken a rule of something. She then tried covering up. Don't get me wrong, it was a far more complex issue, because of her family circumstances. But it actually gives me greater sympathy. And then 2 weeks went on. There was an independent review, and then in that letter it said, and don't quote me, but it was something along the lines of,
although there was no malicious or, no, she wasn't intending on breaking the rule, did break the rule, and there was no further due diligence, and, you know, the fact that she was just blaming the accountancy firm or whoever.
I just need to say, of course, she resigned. She wasn't sacked. Just so we go that out. Get that out.
I think she's resigned because she knew what was probably coming at the same time.
Let's say she resigned. So you see parallels here, do you, with Rachel Reeves?
Yeah, so, no, I think if you look at Rachel Reeves now, we're going down the same route of she's now been seen to break a rule. Straight away now, first of all, I didn't know nothing about it, to your point, and now all of a sudden, oh yeah, well, my husband knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I bet you know, right, and I feel free to call me back in 2 weeks and say I'm right or wrong. In 2 weeks' time, you're going to have the Mirror and all the other press are going to found her like dogs for the next 2 weeks.
Not the Mirror.
And then she's going to be, and then she'll be sacked in then. And in that time, we're going to be called sexist, we're going to be called everything. No, same thing as Angela Rayner. Because she was a middle class, a working class woman, we were sexist and people were going.
Oh yes, it was class. It was misogynistic and classist. Yeah. Hey Ryan, can I ask you a question? The events in Caerphilly last week. Do you think Plaid or Reform will win the Senate next year?
Well, I hope Reform. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I think the main reason for that is I think people who voted Plaid don't. No, a lot of people, as you know, are tactical voting, so actually there's not a lot of people who actually probably wanted them in power. It was just more they preferred not to have Reform. I think Reform and, Plaid and Labour are very similar with each other in terms of how they operate.
All right. Ryan, we might talk again. I've got to go now because I've only got 30 seconds to get my final call in on this. Ryan, thank you. 30, 40 seconds or so. Ian in Watford, why is this happening? Why is this so important, or is it not in your view? Good morning.
It's not so important. What is quite important to me that it's taken 15 months for the newspapers to find out about it, and they just have to come out just before our budget.
Often happens that way. There's mischief afoot, undoubtedly.
Without doubt. My other, very quickly onto you, is what happened with all the... Do you think she's struggling with the fact there's a great shortfall of tax because of all the electric cars that are on the road? And there's no funds coming from diesel and petrol sales like there was before.
Well, we just heard that, didn't we? Which is a very smart observation of the conversation I had with the chief executive officer of that major motor sales company. Thank you for that. The music means that we have to move on. But we move on by going back to that story that broke last night. From Playboy Prince to Palaver paedophile and now stripped of all honours. Andrew, I asked Minister of Trade Chris Bryant, with his royal career now over, how should we remember Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, Sir Chris?
I guess I'd prefer not to remember him at all.
And I'll be asking you, how will you remember Andrew Mountbatten Windsor? Plus, as England and Manchester United ace Paul Scholes quits TV to care for his autistic son, who's aged 20, what are those challenges? Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a government minister has told Nick he applauds the King's decision to strip Prince Andrew of his titles.
I think it's the right thing to do. I think the vast majority of people in the country will go, great, let's close that chapter.
Sir Chris Bryant says the saga has continued for too long. He'll now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and will also move out of Royal Lodge, the 30-bedroom mansion where he's been living rent-free. Andrew continues to deny the allegations related to his links to Jeffrey Epstein. ITV's royal editor Chris Shipp says Buckingham Palace is hoping to draw a line under it.
We've had a lot of news in the last couple of weeks regarding his titles, regarding his tenancy at Royal Lodge, and the palace have decided that they are doing everything they possibly can to remove Andrew as a potential problem.
Sir Keir Starmer has told Rachel Reeves she faces no further action over the failure to apply for a rental licence for her family home. The letting agent the Chancellor used has apologised for an oversight in not obtaining the paperwork, but it's emerged her husband was aware of the requirements. The Mail on Sunday's Dan Hodges has told Nick he thinks Miss Reeves is guilty of hypocrisy.
Rachel Reeves misled the Prime Minister, his ethics adviser, and the country about why she broke the law. And as we know, in opposition, Rachel Reeves, Keir Starmer and the Labour Party were absolutely vicious in condemning every single breach of the regulations or any sort of breach of public propriety by their political opponents.
A leading charity says corridor care in hospitals is a crisis in plain sight. Age UK has raised concerns that poor quality care is now almost expected in some A&E departments. Ministers say it's unacceptable and they're determined to end it. The Metropolitan Police says analysis shows that live facial recognition is helping to make London safer. The technology led to more than 900 arrests in the last year. And the UK is to provide a further £5 million in aid recovery for Caribbean countries hit by Hurricane Melissa. A specialist rapid deployment team has arrived in Jamaica to provide consular assistance to British nationals. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 28 points at 97.31. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a mild day with rain slowly clearing the southeast this morning. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers with strong winds in the west, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
Time's running out on your old assumptions, Brian.
But Argos is just for toys, right?
Wrong. Sean Corny.
This Samsung Galaxy Watch tracks steps, sleep and heart rate.
Yours is through the roof, Brian.
There is more to Argos.
Get the latest tech and more on the Argos app today. Subject to availability in selected stores and argos.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine, Friday, October the 31st. Story that broke 14 years ago. Finally, the right royal outcast, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It's an unprecedented story. We'll go back to that in just a few moments' time. But also in this hour, in the field of health, caring for your autistic child, or possibly in some of your instances, children. Former England and Manchester United ace Paul Scholes was speaking on the Stick to Football podcast about taking the decision to give up live TV work and others, actually, to care solely for his autistic son, Aidan, who's 20.
Because of Aidan, obviously special needs and stuff that you'll probably know about, all the work I do now is just around his routines, because he has quite a strict routine.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Where were you when that news broke about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor? I was sitting at home, and within seconds of the news dropping, my mobile phone rang, and quite rightly, it was my LBC colleague telling me, you might want to know that Andrew's just been stripped of all his titles, or stripped of style, titles and honours, as the royal decree put out. I couldn't take my eyes off the TV for the next hour and a half or so, and I think it was the same around the world.
More now on that breaking news from the UK, with the King officially stripping titles and honours from Prince Andrew.
And we have breaking news from the UK. Buckingham Palace says King Charles will strip his younger brother Andrew of his titles and honours and force him out of his home.
Right now to an unprecedented move from the King of the UK as he strips his brother Andrew of all titles, including Prince.
You heard 7 News Australia, CBC News, that's in Canada, and NBC News, which is in the US. But here in the UK, the BBC were recording Question Time at the time. In Yorkshire, remember the title he lost a few weeks ago, the Duke of, hosted by Fiona Bruce, and Fiona decided to interrupt the taping.
I'm stopping the recording because you have a breaking story which we should respond to. That's why I stopped you, Matt, okay. So forgive me. So, Prince Andrew. The King has initiated a process, so we're going to discuss this. Prince Andrew will no longer be Prince Andrew. He will be Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. He will surrender the lease to his home, and he will find alternative private accommodation.
Well, that's the reaction in Yorkshire. And if I got my timer right here on my mobile phone, it was 0.8 of a second the applause broke out. Didn't even get to a second before the applause started. So that's the court of public opinion. I'm going to be, if you are of a certain age, you will recall, now many of you weren't even born, but let's say this, he was brave enough to go to combat in the Falklands War. He was a helicopter pilot. He came back an absolute darling. I can still see the images of him on the deck of a ship, I'm going to say it's the Ark Royal, don't quote me, but it'll do, certainly a big ship, with a rose between his teeth. He was the Playboy Prince. Then, of course, understandably, he was second in line to the throne, remember? For a long time, had anything happened to Charles, God forbid, and I don't wish ill in any of them, if anything had happened to Charles, and remember he had that skiing accident where he nearly died, Andrew would have been next in line. One skiing accident, you'd be talking about the... potentially, you'd be talking about the king. That brings you up to stop, doesn't it? Gives you something to think about. But he was... and then, understandably, there were a succession of girlfriends. He had a relationship with a woman called Koo Stark, who turned out to be an actress from soft porn movies. That was not perhaps the highest moment. Got me down to Australia, though, to chase that young woman down there for a series of interviews. And then he started to put to life together as a trade envoy, met, married Sarah Ferguson, everybody, the Sarah Ferguson, Diana got on extremely well. Everybody seemed to be getting on just fine. But there's always been something about the lure of big business, hasn't there, for some of our royals. And Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was no different. So what extraordinary life and times, highs and lows, from hero to zero for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, charted now by LBC's Shivani Sharma.
The first child born to a reigning monarch in a century, Prince Andrew, the third child and second son of Queen Elizabeth II, often thought to be her favourite, gained popularity for his service as a helicopter pilot in the Royal Navy and was considered a national hero by some for his role in the Falklands War.
I'm overjoyed the fact that it's all over. Overjoyed and happy for the islanders themselves, who must have thought it was the most fantastic day in the world to see the British troops come walking in.
And the popularity continued, with 500 million people worldwide embracing Fergie fever, watching the Prince marry Sarah Ferguson in 1986. The couple had two children, Princess Beatrice in 1988 and Princess Eugenie 2 years later.
Sir. What's it like to be a daddy?
Wonderful.
And how's your wife and the baby?
Very well. Very well indeed.
What's your baby look like? Does she resemble you or your wife?
Very difficult to tell who she resembles, but probably after her father and mother, like most.
But his marriage to Sarah Ferguson wasn't to last, divorcing in 1996, although the pair remained amicable.
I would like to think that lessons have been learned, because, my goodness, some lessons did need learning.
But it was the prince's relationship with the disgraced and deceased convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein that unravelled him. And Virginia Giuffre alleged Andrew slept with her three times when she was just a teenager, allegations he strenuously denied in that 2019 Emily Maitlis interview.
There's a slight problem with the sweating, because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, because I had suffered an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War.
The prince's popularity plummeted and his words were picked apart.
I'd taken Beatrice to a Pizza Express in Woking for a party.
Why would you remember that?
Because going to Pizza Express in Woking is an unusual thing for me to do.
Andrew gave up his military titles in 2022, then more recently his Duke of York title, but the pressure on the monarchy still proved too much.
How long have you known about Andrew and Epstein? Yeah. Have you asked the police to cover up for Andrew?
The king has now told his brother he has to move out of his home at the Royal Lodge, stripping him of his prince title, with him now to be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor.
LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma reporting. Now, in the first hour of the show, I spoke with Reverend Jonathan Aitken, the Church of England priest, prison chaplain, former cabinet minister, who, of course, did time back in 1999 for perjury. Some of you may recall, I actually spoke with him last week when he had a letter featured in the Times newspaper saying it might be time to try and think of a way, perhaps, of redemption for Prince Andrew as he was then. So this morning I asked Mr. Aitken, is there a way back for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor?
Yes, certainly there is. But it's largely, I think, up to him. I can only tell you from someone who's had much milder troubles that there are paths of personal and spiritual redemption. There are paths to a new, happy life. They may well involve a combination of prayer and penitence and getting on with a very different style of life. But I think if I was Andrew, apart from trying to get into those things like prayer and penitence, I'd look at a rather famous poem by G.K. Chesterton, also a hymn, and it contains the lines, "And the woodlands and the homesteads plead in silence for their peace." And I think that that's what Andrew's got to do, plead in silence for peace. And I pray that he will find it.
I assure you that wasn't my... Often it is, but on that rare occasion, it wasn't my mobile phone that started ringing. And the government minister on the round was Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant. And I asked him the question that I'm about to ask you. But let's start with Sir Chris. With his royal career now over, how should we remember Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, Sir Chris?
I guess I prefer not to remember him at all.
That grave, a series of crimes he denies.
Oh, look, I mean, it's just gone on and on and on.
14 years.
Yes, exactly. And so many different elements to the story. My heart goes out to Virginia Giuffre's family and to all the people who were the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's appalling, despicable behaviours. And I applaud what the King's done today. I think it's the right thing to do. I think the vast majority of of people in the country will go, great. Let's close that chapter.
So how should we remember the man who was Prince, Andrew who was Prince? Coming to you, Joe, in just a moment. Karen, the son of a monarch is a prince. I might not like him, but he'll still be a prince to me. Well, he might to you, Karen, but he won't. And you have to go back to 1917 when some princes were on the wrong side of the First World War. They were fighting for the Germans. That's how far back this goes. Cheryl in Watford, I don't think Andrew should have been stripped of his prince title because he was born into it. The other title has been given, but that one he was born with. This is now a witch hunt. Ollie agrees, controversial, but this never-ending lynch mobbing of Andrew feels like it's gone too far. The way the family are now pushing for him to face legal proceedings is ugly. They settled out of court. Joe's in Retford. Is it a witch hunt now, Joe? Good morning.
No, I don't think it is. It's people who are giving their opinion and are entitled to it. I don't particularly want to remember the bloke because of what he's done. However, we all make mistakes, but I'm not saying that that was a mistake from him. Mm-hmm. He just was a bit stupid about everything and has caused somebody's life. No, I think Charles is doing... Sorry. King Charles is doing the right thing. And as for Andrew having his house and a new house and everything, Bobby, look, they're all protected, aren't they? And as with his military duty, how long was he in there for? How long was he in the military?
Oh, Lord,
and why
I
is he such
know.
A hero? Because there would have been protection all round for him.
Well, no, hang on, he is in the helicopter.
Yeah, and?
Well, sadly, a lot of military personnel lost their lives in the Falklands conflict. I better get the number for you now. So he would have been one extra set away. Now, it is reported that he wasn't exactly up there on the front line. I get it. But suddenly a stray extra set and you've lost the second in line to the throne.
Yes, I understand that. I do. I understand
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay. What's... By the way, I carry absolutely no brief for him. But what's he guilty of?
Probably what he's denying. And
well, we can't say that. No, we can't. What he's guilty of is appalling judgment, appalling lapses in judgment, and making friends with a convicted paedophile. But he's not actually been guilty of any crime, has he?
So it's total stupidity, isn't it, what he did?
Right.
But it doesn't alter the fact what he did, and we don't know some of the things that maybe that he did.
Well,
we'll never know because it's royal. We won't know that.
Joe, thank you. I just want to get out there. There are 255 British military personnel were killed in the Falklands. 775 were wounded. So that is the sort of combat into which he flew. Now, again, he may well have been way, way at the back, merely, I don't know, ferrying supplies, but he's certainly a braver man than I was. I never fought in the Falklands. Joe, thanks for getting started. How shall we remember the prince, the man who was prince and is now Andrew Mountbatten Windsor? 9:16 LBC News headlines, Simon Conway.
The family of Virginia Giuffre says she has brought down a prince after the king formally stripped his brother Andrew of his titles. A government minister has told Nick Rachel Reeves did not act in bad faith as she is cleared over the failure to get the correct rental licence. And a leading charity says corridor care in hospitals is a crisis in plain sight. LBC weather mild with a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M25, there are delays anti-clockwise from Junction 2 at the A2 to the Dartford Tunnel. It's because a lorry broke down earlier. And then also on the M25, there are clockwise queues from Junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. In New Cross, the New Cross Road, the A2 is closed both ways because of a fire in a building, and that's causing delays. In central London, Shaftesbury Avenue stays closed between Cambridge Circus and Greek Street because of an ongoing investigation. Lengthy delays in Kentish Town. Leighton Road is closed both ways because of a burst water main. And on the Underground, no service for the Metropolitan line between Baker Street and Aldgate.
LBC.
Introducing the redesigned Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot, even when your holiday to-do lists get to be a lot. Like organising your holiday shopping and responding to holiday requests and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians and Uncle Mike's carnivore diet. Whoa. Luckily, the Dell PC helps you handle a lot. And with impressive battery life, you can do it all faster to get it all done. That's the power of a Dell PC with Intel inside. Get yours at dell.co.uk/holiday.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4pm.
If you're in a position where another £1,000 to find is the difference between you going on holiday and you not going on holiday, I do actually think, for a week, the one family holiday you get to take that year is actually a good reason for you to miss school with your child.
Tom Swarbrick.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
LBC.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18-plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
How shall we remember him? Finally, time to meet Mr. Mountbatten Windsor. Oh, he was once Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, and the Earl of goodness knows what else. Mohammed in South Shields, how will you remember him? Good morning.
With embarrassment, to be honest with you, Nick.
Would you?
Yeah. The King's done what he's done, and rightly so. And, to be honest, my fear would be, is there any more skeletons in that closet that he's got?
Well, now, I'm speaking as an old journalist, or newspaper man in every sense of the word. You've got to wonder what the tipping point was, Mohammed, why they decided to do what they did last night.
How much can he keep kicking the royal family? I mean, he's torturing them. Torturing them and
well, not
torturing
now.
Them.
He's gone now, isn't he?
He's gone. Yeah, but he did though, Nick.
Sorry, he did. He did what?
He did embarrass publicly embarrass the family.
He's been appalling. There is one of the earlier callers. There's a horrific sense of self entitlement. There's a shocking sense of arrogance. It comes across in all the TV interviews. It's almost like he cannot believe that he's being troubled with this sort of thing. It's way, way beneath him that he should have to answer to any of us.
He's a nightmare. Mm.
When you see him alongside his brother, the King, as we did in last month's funeral for the Duchess of Kent, and I said to Katie, an earlier caller, with the King, you just see duty and dignity and compassion and empathy, and with Andrew, you see the exact opposite of all four. Would you agree? I think we're having trouble with the line-up, Mohammed. Mohammed, I will leave it there, because I don't think we're getting you all the time. No, in fact, I don't think you've even heard me say goodbye. So if you can hear this, goodbye, Mohammed. We'll come back to more of your calls on this in a moment. Now, what are the challenges of coping with a child or children with autism? We talk a lot about that, because it is such a live issue, and it would appear that diagnosis is far superior now, so we're able to see that toddlers, and of course then as they get older, these people have certain issues.
Well, in an emotional interview, the England and Manchester United ace Paul Scholes has said he's had to take a step back from TV punditry and other work to spend more time caring for his severely autistic son, Aidan, who is 20. Now, he was speaking on the football, Stick to Football podcast, alongside fellow footballers Roy Keane, Ian Wright and Jill Scott. And he opened up. Here's a little of the conversation. Let me get it right. Stick to Football is the podcast. It starts with the voice of a fellow Manchester United player, of course, Roy Keane.
Do you not do games anymore, Scholesy? No.
No.
Have you stopped doing it?
Yeah. Why?
No European games or anything?
No.
You did Champions League, didn't you, with Kaz quite a bit last season?
Yeah, I did last year. I just made a decision this year because of Aidan. Obviously, special needs and stuff that you'll probably know about. All the work I do now is just around his routines, because he has quite a strict routine every single day, so I just decided everything I'm going to do is around Aidan.
Yeah. Well, I think people really don't realise the punditry, sorry, that you do travel a bit, don't you? If you're travelling up and down to London and you're away for one or two
days.
Well,
a lot of the stuff I was doing was in the studio as well, obviously being in Manchester, in London all the time. Right.
Because you might not want to talk about this, but your routine that you followed, Drew, because if I say to you sometimes, like about a meeting, say on a certain day, you say, no, that's absolutely, I can't do it that day. What is your routine a week that you follow around, Aidan?
Well, me and Claire, obviously, not together anymore, so we're having three nights each, and Claire's mum has him on a Friday night, but we'll always do the same things with him.
Right.
Mm. And he doesn't understand, he won't know what day of the week it is. He won't know what time it is, but he'll know from what we're doing what day it is. So I pick him up every Tuesday from his daycare place that he goes to for 4 hours, and we go swimming.
Mm. So he loves swimming.
Loves it. So we're going to the pool for 2 hours. We'll go home, have his pizza on the way home. So that he knows every single day something different. Thursday, I'll pick him up, we'll go for something to eat, then go home. On a Sunday, I'll pick him up from Claire's house, we'll go to Tesco, he buys about a trolley full of chocolate. So he doesn't know what day it is, he doesn't know what the time is, he only knows from what we're doing.
How old is he, Paul?
21 in December.
So the Claire there is Scholes' childhood sweetheart, Claire Froggatt, who they wed in 1999. They share parenting responsibilities 3 days a week, as he said there. Sadly, they're no longer married. It's the Stick to Football podcast. You also heard the voice, of course, of Gary Neville and Roy Keane, both former Manchester United colleagues. Ian Wright, who did not play for Manchester United, and Jill Scott. So what are the challenges? Anna Kennedy is an autism campaigner with Anna Kennedy Online. And I understand you have two autistic children. Is that right? May I call you Anna to make it easy?
Yeah, you may. Yes, Nick, we've spoken before.
Anna, good to have you on. Remind the listeners what we've talked about and who we are talking about specifically in this instance.
Okay, so I'm a mum of two autistic adults. They're now 32 and 35, and also my husband is on the spectrum as well. So I fight every day to try and make voices be heard, that whether they're children, whether they're adults. I totally sympathise with Paul. I speak to so many families where autism either brings them closer together or they split up. And it teaches you things about yourself, and also you feel that you learn things about yourself that you didn't even possibly think that you could cope with. So from getting the diagnosis, trying to find the right school, transition, you know, when they get to 18, 19, then, you know, what happens? You know, do they go to college? What support do they need? It's just a minefield of information. So it sounds like, I'm not sure if Paul has had a social care assessment, and I know that they're really under pressure at the minute, but you need as much support as you possibly can. Like, my son was at a centre. It closed in August. We were given 28 days notice. So now, instead of getting 5 days, 10 till three, he gets 4 days, 10 till three. So I work full time supporting families and adults, and that's what my husband does as well. So many parents, and only in the last couple of weeks, I've been speaking to parents who feel isolated, unheard, absolutely shattered. And I totally get that, because, like, for example, my son Angelo is 32. You know, he doesn't sleep a lot. He has 3 to 4 hours sleep. He has toileting issues. And those are things that I have to deal with. every single day. But I love him no matter what. And those small, you know, progresses that he makes are huge to us, and it might not even seem anything to somebody listening in. And it's a lifestyle that you've got to get used to, and you do what works for you. So my husband and I both work from home. We've set up the house in such a way that we can still look after Angelo. He's got no sense of danger. He's always going to need one-to-one support for the rest of his life. And like Paul, you worry about who is going to look after my son when I'm no longer around. And my eldest son, Patrick, says to me, "Mom, I can't do what you do." And I said, "I wouldn't expect you to, Patrick." I said, "Please just make sure that he's healthy, he's clean, wherever he is. You know, he looks happy, because you hear such horror stories."
Okay, can I, as you've chosen to name your sons, I will pick up on that if that's okay. Is Patrick, you say both your children are autistic. What level does Patrick have?
So Patrick has Asperger's syndrome, and he was diagnosed at the age of 4, but I wasn't told until he was 7 years old, and I found out by accident because he was struggling at school. So he now is in the workplace, and he's been working at Pinewood Studios now for 8 years. They're fantastic with him. They give him a lot of support, and he loves his job, and he's also now living in his own flat, but he still needs support now and again, where Angelo lives at home with me, and he's always going to need one-to-one support. You know, I'm 65 now, yes, and I can't do what I'm doing for the rest of my life. And what I worry about is that there's so many charities, smaller charities now, that are closing down, and they are the lifeline to a lot of families.
What are the pressures? This young man is 21 in December. What are the pressures as he moves from his teens into young adulthood, the additional pressures?
The additional pressures are, obviously, his parents are not going to be able to look after him. And you need to find the right placement that really understands your son, where he can progress, where he feels happy. For me, as long as my son is happy, that's, like, fantastic, because he's always going to need one-to-one support. I have spoken to adults where their parents have died, and one man ended up sleeping in a tent with his dog in the freezing cold weather. He contacted me, said, I can't live like this, somebody else.
And lastly, how aware are local authorities, local NHS trusts to these issues, Anna?
I would like to think they're getting better, but parents are still struggling, and I think it's as well to do with the lack of funding. Obviously, there's the Oliver McGowan training that's going on in hospitals, but what's happening is that a lot of the hospitals are not progressing to the second stage. So I've seen Paula, who's one of my ambassadors, is now saying that there's so many different organisations are getting the funding for the second tier of Oliver McGowan training, but they're not actually training their staff.
Anna Kennedy, you're an autism campaigner with Anna Kennedy Online, and you spoke of your two sons. Thank you for your input on that. Let's get a call in. Mitesh is in Leeds. What are you going to tell me, Mitesh? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I can really identify with Paul's commitment. Me and my former partner, we're just going through a breakup at the minute of 3 months. I have an intellectual disabled son who's 8 years old. He requires full care. You know, he's a danger, you know, no concept of danger. But, you know, if you look at Paul superficially, you know, you're saying he's broken up from his other half.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's a long relationship, but statistics do prove.
26 years. Yeah, go on, sorry.
Yeah, well, ours is 18. So it does prove statistically, I've looked a lot into this, that divorce rates double because of the versus, you know, let's say normal having normal kids as such, because of the strain on the relationship.
I use the word regular, perhaps better than normal, just so we don't offend.
Yeah.
Do you mind my asking? I don't want to cause you additional distress, because I know I've been through the divorce. I've seen that movie. I did like the ending, but I didn't enjoy the movie as I went through it. What are the pressures you think that your lad brought between you and is it your wife or your partner? I can't remember what you said.
Wife. I think it's the constant. Obviously, you have to dedicate all your emotional and cognitive kind of decision making around the child, right? And then you move further apart in terms of operating as a couple. So because it is, you know, you've got to put all your resources into it. Yeah, 100%, right? You know, whatever, planning, his needs, you know, and even some other siblings' needs may get pushed to the wayside. So I really identify with Paul, and also that looking at Paul's decision now, 10 years, that will be us in 10 years, because all the education will have stopped, if you know what I mean. So, you know, we are planning for that. That will probably be us.
Do you have other children? Does the lad have...
Yes, if we do, yeah. Okay. We have an older daughter. But what I'm saying is, I really identify that. That's kind of how, the roadmap, really, pre and post-separation in terms of being free to care for him full-time and get in a position to do that.
And I'm glad we haven't given his first name, but let's make sure we don't. Does the 8-year-old know that you and his mum are splitting up?
Well, yeah, we'll leave it. I can't fully answer that, but he knows I don't live there. Right, okay. Right, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I don't want to cause you any additional distress. Mitesh, and I'm not saying this glibly, because sadly, I have been through a divorce, and I know how horrific they are. I wish you the best passage through it all. As somebody once said, it's like a train journey. You get on in a really bad place on a divorce, and you go along, and suddenly you come out of a tunnel, and the scenery looks really good. And you think, wow! And then, dear God, another bump in the road comes. You go through another tunnel and it gets really dark. But you do eventually get to your destination and you get off the train and you think, whoa, well, that's probably worth it. I can get on with the rest of my life. Just to that point that Mitesh was making, Paul Scholes says, last season I do the Europa League. That's the night I'd usually have him. So he was all agitated, biting and scratching. I guess it's the regularity for any child, isn't it? But, of course, when you're in 20, as this young man is, then you just, if you don't have your dad, I suppose you've just lost your way, haven't you? Someone who is seeking to put their house in order is the Chancellor, was trying to bring an end to this rental row. In the first hour, I spoke with one of her colleagues, Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant. He told me it both exonerates and contradicts her, Sir Chris.
Well, that often happens in life, doesn't it? I've often been exonerated and contradicted.
You've never been guilty of anything, Sir Chris. I will not hear it.
I've been guilty of nearly everything in my time.
And isn't that the reality? The testimony from the Chancellor over the last 2.5 days has contradicted and exonerated her? Or, having had a reprimand from the PM, where does it leave her in your eyes? We're late because of that extended conversation with that dad. It's 9:33. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari here. On LBC, the news headlines are read by Simon Conway.
Prince Andrew is expected to move to a private residence on the Sandringham estate in Norfolk. He's agreed to leave Royal Lodge in Windsor, and the King has also stripped his brother of his titles, including Prince. Andrew continues to deny allegations of sexual abuse. Rachel Reeves is to face no further action over the failure to obtain the correct licence to rent out her family home. But Sir Keir Starmer says it's regrettable the Chancellor didn't share all the relevant emails when she first told him about the issue this week. A charity's described what it says are truly shocking cases of poor care of elderly people in hospital corridors. Ministers admit the findings by Age UK are unacceptable and insist action is being taken. LBC weather, a mild day with rain slowly clearing the south. East. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers with strong winds in the west, a high of 16 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Hadush Kabatu, the Epping migrant sex offender, has been apprehended. The political implications are significant. People like Nigel Farage, who are pointing at the British state and saying nothing works, that is a powerful political argument, and one which seems to have been encapsulated by this very sorry tale.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
I spoke to Health Secretary Wes Streeting. I simply do not understand how something like this can happen. There does need to be accountability when such a kind of grotesque and spectacular failure takes place.
You think someone should be sent?
I know one person's been suspended already.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10 on LBC.
Half term is here. I've 100% got this. They will keep a lid on the glitter and they will not ambush my work calls. But if all else fails, McDonald's Deal Drop.
Get 15% off the whole menu when you spend £15 on food and drink. Redeem this half term only on the McDonald's app. Fees apply to delivery. 18 plus, one-time use per week until the 2nd of November. Participating restaurants, T's and C's apply.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Two people in the news, one a Chancellor, one a Chancer in the eyes of many. Rachel Reeves and Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, formerly known as Prince. Let's come back to a conversation about Rachel Reeves. It's intriguing how many of you are piling in on me, which is fine, I don't care, saying that this is all just Conservative propaganda. But you seem to conveniently lose sight of the fact that she has been reprimanded by the Prime Minister, who says that, to get the language absolutely right in his letter, yes, I know I'm rustling papers, here we go. It is clearly regrettable. She should have conducted a full trawl through all email correspondence. So if the Prime Minister is saying that, surely he thinks something's gone wrong. Now, in the first hour of the show, I spoke with the Minister for Trade, Sir Chris Bryant. I asked for some clarity around whether Rachel Reeves knew she needed a licence, or, remember, of course, the latest one was that she did, but that the agency actually failed to implement it. So, Sir Chris, which was it?
Well, as you know, Nick, when I've been on with you about previous stories under a previous government, I always said that it was really important that we had a fair and process for judging.
That is true. In fairness to you, you have, yes.
And sometimes I've said that, I'm sorry, this story, for instance, the first story about Boris Johnson and his Mystique holiday, we acquitted him. We found that there was nothing to be seen there, and we said he hadn't done anything wrong. And what we've got here is we have an independent advisor on ministerial interests who was appointed by Rishi Sunak. He's not a Labour person. Appointed by Rishi Sunak.
Well, he's independent, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he has been given additional powers by Keir Starmer since we came to power. He looked at what Rachel had to say 2 days ago, and what she and the new bunch of emails that were found between her husband and the letting agency yesterday. And he reckons that there has been no bad faith. He thinks it's regrettable, obviously, that the original licence wasn't obtained.
Of course.
But I think, I'll just do one little bit more, if that's okay.
Please.
Which is just to say that, look, what actually happened, Rachel Reeves became Chancellor of the Exchequer. Like every other Chancellor of the Exchequer, she moved into Downing Street and they let out their home through a letting agency. The letting agency have now said that they would get the licence that was required. All the paperwork was ready. They said that they would get the licence that was required, and then they failed to do it.
I hear you, Sir Chris, but her initial defence to the Prime Minister was she didn't know that she needed a licence, and then we discover that her husband had been in communication with the letting agency about that very licence. So which is it?
Yeah, well, I think I understand the confusion about the two different accounts. But the truth is, look, I don't think Rachel Reeves has, and the independent advisor has found this, has acted in bad faith. She came to the Prime Minister as soon as she could. The Prime Minister went to the independent advisor and asked for his advice. He looked at it on the basis of the evidence that he had. The new evidence, it's not stuff that she was hiding from anybody. It actually exonerates her. So
it does, but it totally
it would have been easier if she remembered from the first.
But
sorry,
Sir Chris,
Nick, I missed you there.
Sir Chris, you're right. It both exonerates but contradicts her. Can you hear that? I can hear you. I see you're having trouble. Let me go again, Sir Chris.
I heard it.
Okay. It both exonerates and contradicts her, Sir Chris.
Well, that often happens in life, doesn't it? I've often been exonerated and contradicted.
You've never been guilty of anything, Sir Chris. I will not hear it.
I've been guilty of nearly everything in my time.
Sir Chris Bryant. Glenn, coming to you on this in just a moment. Tina says, if the Conservatives have been in power and this Rachel thing had happened on Boris's watch, Keir Starmer would be out there guns blazing and trying to hang them out to dry. Mark in Harrow, can someone highlight the pattern of Rachel Reeves's various indiscretions, CV mistakes, economist or customer complaints, overselling her experience, the book where there are accusations of plagiarism? It all points to someone who's either chaotic or would seem to play hard and fast with the rules. Julia in Ongar, no excuse. The Chancellor should have made sure the licence was in place. She is the Chancellor, for heaven's sake. Busy? That high-end government should make sure all T's are double... All terms, I suppose, are double-crossed. I'm furious. Oh, I see, all T's are double-crossed, I see. No benefit of the doubt. Glenn in Romford. Are you furious, Glenn? Good morning.
Furious? But there is another angle to this. The tenant of the property can actually claim back the rent that they've paid.
The tenant of the... Oh, yes, that's right. They're saying they could be in line for, like, 38,000 or something like that.
Yeah, what a windfall for Christmas.
But if they could get it through this side of Christmas, it would be. How big a deal is this in your eyes?
Oh, it's a real big deal. She's in charge of the country's purse strings. If she can't keep her own purse strings
I mean, by the way, I'm with you, but a lot of people will be shouting at the radio. It was the agency who didn't apply for the licence. They said leave it to us, and Harvey and Wheeler didn't get it done.
Well, if I forget to renew my driving licence,
yep.
can I use that to... I'll get my wife to do it for
no,
me.
No, and the one I always use, if you don't get your tax right, or if you run a business, you don't get your quarterly VAT right, and you say I was very busy, they're not going to say, that's all right, you should have said, that's fine.
No, of course they're not. One rule for one, two-tier care again.
Two-tier care, of course, this one has to say... is landing at the door of the Chancellor, but it is the Prime Minister who said there's nothing to see here, and he's satisfied now, despite there being a mild reprimand for her earlier testimony. Glenn, thank you. Jude is in Wakefield on the same subject. Jude, you're concerned about the level of accuracy or honesty here, I have
to note. Yes, absolutely. Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Hi. I'm really frustrated in the sense that we all have to tell the truth. My mother always told me that a liar is always known as a liar. And the fact is, many years ago, she actually lied on her CV when she worked for HBOS.
Yes.
And actually, the amount of time that she was there was incorrect, and she buffered it all out.
Yes.
And so that in myself makes me think, well, if she's going to be managing our money, and now it seems that there could be a lie there, who knows? One day she's saying one thing, the next day she's saying something else about it, or her husband is.
Yes.
But we just end up with, a property manager who handled it and who's now left. Well, who is he? You know, and was that so by the company?
Oh,
just makes me a bit frustrated. Is there a truth there?
There'll be someone sitting in South London dreading the knock on the door. The man who worked for Harvey and Wheeler?
Exactly. I think that's so wrong. I mean, I've just done my self-assessment return yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not self-employed. I actually am retired now. I get a state pension only.
Right.
And I get part of my state pension from the Irish Republic because I worked there for some number of years.
Okay.
That is seen as foreign money. So when I retired, they wrote to me and said, you're earning foreign money, you have to fill out a self-assessment. Otherwise, you will be fined a lot of money. Now, the amount of money I get on this part of the pension is exactly the same as a month's rent for her. And I keep getting less. If I don't fill this in and send it, I will be prosecuted. So it's horses for courses.
It is, I'm afraid, a very different set of rules. Let me ask you this lastly, Jude. In under a month, the woman of whom we speak will stand up and tell us the spending plans for the next year, possibly for years to come, and will tell us and try and persuade us that everything is under financial control, that she's across everything, and that she's steering us towards growth. How much will this damage her the integrity she will try and put forward next month with her budget?
Absolutely, mustly. She should go before it actually happens. We need someone who knows what they're doing, who is truthful about their job. I don't believe one word she says. As far as I'm concerned, she should go now with Keir Starmer. He could go as well.
Jude, have yourself a good weekend. Thank you. Coming up after the news, we go back to our conversation we started concerning Paul Scholes, the England and Manchester United ace, who's decided to step back from commentary, football commentary, and other matters, actually, so he can provide more care for his autistic son, severely autistic son, aged 20. We're going to take your stories on similar themes right after this. It is 9:45, so let's get the latest LBC News headlines now then. Simon Conway.
The King's brother, Andrew, has had his prince title removed and is expected to move to a private residence on the Sandringham estate in Norfolk. Sir Keir Starmer has told Rachel Reeves she faces no further action over the failure to apply for a rental licence for her family home. And the Metropolitan Police says live facial recognition has led to more than 900 arrests in the last year. LBC weather mild with a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 clockwise about 4 miles up to junction 16 at the M40, and that's all down to an accident and the road is partially blocked. In New Cross, the A2 New Cross Road stays closed both ways because of a fire in a building, and that's causing lengthy delays. In Kentish Town, Leighton Road is closed both ways because of a burst water main. That's causing queues. And in central London, Shaftesbury Avenue remains closed both ways between Cambridge Circus and Greek Street because of an accident. accident. On the underground, no Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge, no Metropolitan line between Baker Street and Aldgate. There are severe delays on the Hammersmith and City line and minor delays on the Circle and Bakerloo.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
So the rest of the world will finally join us in referring to him as Andrew Windsor. How significant a moment do you think this is?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Get that EuroMillions feeling with Friday's £65 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's EuroMillions jackpot is £65 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Oh, what's that? That is my new 4K Ring video doorbell. Looks like there's two dodgy blokes outside the house.
Oh, they're looking in the window. They're testing the door.
Right, two-way talk on. Let them hear this. Yep, that's done it. Look at them go. Always know who's at your door with Ring's new 4K security cameras. Available now at ring.com and Amazon.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18-plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
ITV presents...
Oh, my God.
Gas!
There is a chemical weapon in the cab.
We are dealing with a serial killer.
The devices are designed to kill, but first he wants to suffocate them. I'm spent. I can't watch you. You give everything until you've got nothing left. I take risks. That's my job.
Lana!
Hold your... breath. Trigger Point. Available now on ITVX.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Best wishes to Paul Scholes as he decides to hang up the microphone to look after his boy. Gaz is in Shrewsbury. You have a degree of sympathy, Gaz. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Tell me your story. You have an autistic child?
Yeah, so Thomas, he's 6 years old. He's got what you call profound autism. We don't tend to use levels like they do in the US.
Oh, right. So was that what... So I read of this young man, severe. Would that be similar to what your boy has then?
Yeah, absolutely. I've used the word severe many times. We started a podcast called the Autism Dadcast in May this year. And on Instagram alone, we've kind of gained almost 70,000 followers, and it just kind of highlights how much need there is just for kind of human stories. And kind of what Paul Scholes said this week on that podcast just kind of resonated, and I know it's going to resonate with a lot of parents.
What are the common themes that you explore regularly on Autism Dadcast?
Yeah, so it's similar to what Paul Scholes said. I mean, that's one of the really big ones, is kind of what happens to our children once we're no longer around. And apart from that, it's just kind of the day-to-day struggles that we all deal with.
What are those struggles?
Oh, wow. There's a lot. So, I mean, a lot of it is kind of, Thomas specifically, he's nonverbal, struggles with food. He goes to a specialist school, which has been absolutely fantastic. But again, it's the communication piece is the bit that's really difficult for a lot of these kids. It's trying to find the best way that they find to communicate that suits them. We talk a lot about trying to get into their world, but I've said before, you know, you need to get into your child's world, but then you also need to kind of draw them into our world a bit, because there is going to come a point where we're no longer around and they're going to have to live in this world without us.
You write on your podcast brief, you navigate the chaos and joy of autism parenting. There's dark humour. What do you mean by that?
Dark humour. So I used to be in the military as well, and dark humour was something else that came up. And, you know, you kind of have to have this dark humour to get through the hard times. We all know how difficult our lives can be with our children. And sometimes even the stuff that you really struggle with in a kind of shared community, you sometimes have to laugh about it. And we've actually, a lot of the communication we've had from parents to us is kind of they appreciate that we are making light of some of these situations because life's hard enough as it is. So sometimes you do need to have this dark kind of humour.
But that's quite a military, it's a bit like policing. That's quite a military or policing thing, isn't it? You need that dark humour to survive effectively.
That's it. So, yeah, it is survival. It's such an emotional thing to go through, and it does, strangely, I don't know why, but it does sometimes help to kind of have a dark humour around all of this kind of stuff.
What are your plans for the lad as he gets up? So he's six now, you said.
Yeah.
What are your plans for when he gets older? Is he at a level that he could look after himself?
Absolutely not.
Right.
No, I mean, he will be living with us as a grown man for the rest of our lives.
Right.
And my podcast partner, Andy, he's got a daughter and is a couple of years younger, very similar to my lad, Thomas. And we're kind of going to be in very similar situations, as are so many parents across the UK.
I hope the answer is negative, but has it put pressure on your relationship with your wife or girlfriend?
Honestly, in our situation, we have had hard times, but my wife and I, we've never been closer. It's made us such an amazing team. But it is very common, you know, across the board, that it kind of goes one way or the other.
And what about your broadcasting mate?
Andy? Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go into Andy's personal situation.
Is he ex-military?
No, he's not ex-military. No, he's not. It's funny, we kind of, because he's a couple of years behind me, as it were, we often find that he's asking me for advice and I'm asking other parents for advice that are a couple of years ahead of me. And, yeah, it's really helpful.
To lastly, to a dad or a mum who's coming to this fresh, they've just had a diagnosis that their child has a degree of autism, what's the most salient lesson or point you would want to make to them?
That's such a great question. Do you know what? I think the thing that I've learnt the most is if there's anything that we kind of struggle with, anything that we're finding really hard, are we finding hard because of how it makes us feel, or are we finding hard because of our kids? So sometimes I would get really upset about things, and it was because of the expectations I wanted for Thomas, not necessarily what Thomas would want for himself, whether that be, you know, relationships, things like that, or whether I want him to talk. There was a long time where I wanted him to be able to be verbal, but I've kind of learned over time that whether he's verbal or not doesn't matter. He needs to be able to communicate in a way that he can and he's happy to. And as long as he can communicate as he goes through life, he's going to be okay.
Well, you've communicated brilliantly. Thank you for your service and thank you for your input. And good luck with Autism Dad Cast. And best wishes to your boy. Thank you. Leshmi in Cardiff. Leshmi, you've worked in this area as well. Is that right? You run a therapy business?
I do both, yes. So I'm a paediatric GP. My niece is autistic, and she's the reason I started doing part-time what I enjoy doing, which is baking therapy with children with neurodisabilities.
What sort of ages children do you work with?
Any age, really, from those who are pre-diagnosis up to those who are post-diagnosis. They basically try and show parents how to teach their children life skills at home, using cakes as a fun way of doing it, so like using the baking process, because it's very repetitive, very specific, and they quite enjoy it. And then you can use that to teach them things like reading or maths, or, you know, improving their textural, you know, getting them to sit.
How much is it the routine, do you think, that they buy into through baking?
A lot of it makes them very comfortable. They very much prefer specifics, the numbers that have to be the same, you know, amount that you do every time, the same amount in the oven every time, the same amount of mixing. They really do respond to that because it's very specific, and anybody who deals with autistic children know that they like that specificity, and they like the fact that it's repetitive and it doesn't change. And using that, you can then teach them, you know, lots of things around it.
This seems to have been one of the issues for Paul Scholes' lad, in that Paul, that Mr. Scholes would be away commentating on the day that should have been his day, and the young man just couldn't cope with it. It should be his dad, let's say, on a Wednesday night. It should be dad on a Wednesday night. It's not dad, so the son Aidan would be in a really bad way. This speaks to the routine you were just explaining?
Yes, yes, it does. They very much have difficulty with conceptual things, so time, dates, numbers, they don't really make sense in the physical way of things. So saying a Tuesday is a very conceptual concept, but if you say this is the day that we are doing X, Y and Z, it will make sense to them.
Thanks for all the input on that, and good luck. How many children typically in a class do you work with? Is it one-on-one?
This is a side thing that I do, so I give advice to as many people as I can. It's just something I do alongside my NHS work.
Well done, and thank you again for your NHS work. Let's finish with the story it was the biggest story till around about 7 o'clock last night, which was the Chancellor trying to put her house in order over that rental contract. But, of course, it got overtaken by events with Prince Andrew. But we've got time for at least one call. Jackie's in Fife. Jackie, big deal this one, or nothing to see here, as the police might say? Move on.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Yeah, I think it is a big deal because at the end of the day, we're living in worrying times where, you know, lots of people I know are concerned about the budget in November,
yeah,
you know, for many different reasons. And, you know, lots of people now, every penny in their house is being efficiently and effectively spent,
mm-hmm,
you know, to keep the money, you know, to not run out at the end of the month. And the whole thing on this, we have a rental house in London, which, again, we're worried about.
Say you're worried about what the budget might hold, you mean?
Well, because of the new renters' rights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm so sorry, the legislation.
National insurance being applied to your income. You know, again, we've only got one house in London. And, you know, we have a nice property that we try to keep up. It's rented. It's a God of HMO. Mm. And at the end of the day, that HMO or any license...
House of multiple occupancy.
The responsibility is for the owner to get those licenses. Whether you delegate the task, it doesn't matter. The owner, the responsibility is on the owner. And we did get someone to help us with the HMO, you know, I got a copy, it's in my files, I know it's up to date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I make sure my gas certificate, electrics, everything's up to date, because I know it's our responsibility. And Well, my concern is that we are all sitting here slightly concerned, and all these incidents are happening with government ministers. It's just taking away the confidence. You know, you hope that they are looking at the figures, and you know, I'm a qualified accountant. You hope that they're looking at the figures, they understand the figures, they're not going to waste our money. But with all these things that happen, the confidence is ebbing away.
Well, you certainly hope someone such as the Chancellor will be studying the figures. Jackie, you had the last word of the week. Thank you. Have yourself a safe weekend. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done for another week. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. Then I'll be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The same to you. As the time approaches 10 o'clock, perhaps because it's Friday, some stories are huge and not huge at the same time, aren't they? Obviously, Andrew Windsor. And it is, of course, nice to see the rest of the world finally catching up with what we've been calling him for the last 2 years. Andrew Windsor being stripped of all his titles is a moment. A moment of significance. But is it also a moment to reflect upon how ridiculous all these titles are? I don't know. I might let you decide this morning. I've had a long week. But it also, of course, throws into at least question the way that the palace have handled this from the very beginning and what the actual breaking point was. Because a lot of the contenders for breaking point have actually been around for a while.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Prince Andrew is expected to move to the Sandringham estate after he was stripped of his titles by the King. He'll now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor after weeks of renewed scrutiny about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Royal author Robert Hardman says it's a major decision by King Charles.
If you remember just a few days ago, we were all debating, should he still be in that house? Well, he's not only out of the house, he's off the estate. The fact that he's been kicked off to Sandringham, which is a totally private estate owned by the King, paid for by the King, and he's going to sit there in East Anglia in a sort of royal Siberia. I mean, that's, you know, that is a major move.
Andrew continues to deny the allegations against him. The King and Queen say their thoughts and sympathies remain with the victims and survivors of any forms of abuse. Government Minister Chris Bryant has told LBC he welcomes the decision.
My heart goes out to Virginia Giuffre's family and to all the people who were the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's appalling, despicable behaviours. And I applaud what the King's done today. I think it's the right thing to do. I think the vast majority of this of people in the country will go, great, let's close that chapter.
The Trade Minister's also told us the Chancellor did not act in bad faith over the rental arrangements for her family home. Sir Keir Starmer's decided Rachel Reeves will not face any further action over the failure to obtain the correct licence. The letting agent she used has apologised for an oversight. The UK is to provide an extra £5 million in aid to help the Caribbean recover from Hurricane Melissa. It'll pay for things like solar lamps, shelter kits and sanitation products. 49 people are now known to have died in several countries, including Jamaica. Cherie McLeod lives in the town of Lacovia in the west of the island.
I never thought in a million years that I would be in the situation trying to get help. And with little to no communication, we can't reach no officials, no emergency teams. And then I'm hoping and praying that help can reach us soon.
And the Scottish Secretary, Douglas Alexander, will raise the subject of US tariffs on whiskey when he meets the American ambassador today. Levies on exports to the US are believed to be costing the industry about £4 million a week. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 45 points at 97.14, and the pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a mild day with rain slowly clearing the southeast. Elsewhere, sunny spells and blustery showers with strong winds in the west, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. The royal family has one job. Sorry, I was a bit profound. Good morning. Speaking of one job, am I the only one thinking about Rachel Reeves' husband from the perspective of being a slightly feckless husband? By feckless, I mean not very good at the detail. He's a senior civil servant, but I know exactly what he's been through over the course of the last 24 hours. Okay, darling, you're definitely across this, right? You're handling all the rental stuff. Yes, look, I'm 53 years old. Oh, I don't know how old he is, actually, but quite close to home. I'm 53 year old. Stop treating me like a child. I can handle a flipping house rental, for goodness sake. And he got a phone call, presumably on Monday night or Sunday night. I said, darling, did you actually sort out all of the house rentals? And he has spent 24 hours desperately searching through his email history because he was certain that he had done, but he couldn't find the proof. And it turned out that the bloke who said they were going to apply for the licence left the letting agency the next day. I don't see any topic here. Sorry, Daily Mail. I know you think it's more important than an actual prince of the realm losing his title, because that is what you've chosen to splash with this morning. Your kind of rapidly deflating balloon of manufactured fury regarding the Chancellor's housing arrangements. But at this point, I can't see any phone in that would add to what we did yesterday when we described what we thought
had happened and what turned out, which doesn't always wash out this way, it turned out had happened. If you think I'm wrong, let me know. If you've got a good way back into that story, then I'll give you the money myself. 5 minutes after 10 is the time. So Andrew stripped of Prince title. We will be joined by the hero of the hour, if that is the correct turn of phrase, in about 11:45, I think, today. We'll talk to Emily Maitlis, who, of course, set the ball rolling on the story of our age, the royal story of our age. I've also got a little bit of a tease for you with regard to who will be the... See, I had a conversation with the producer earlier. I thought I'd already told you who the special guest was going to be for Full Disclosure Live next year, raising money for Global's Make Some Noise. It's quite exciting. It's what you might call a crossing of the streams for certain sections of our society. And don't let me go home without remembering to tell you who that is and to tell you how you can get hold of tickets. Will we be telling people how to get hold of tickets? Yes, and telling you how to get hold of tickets as well. But how do you want to do this, do you think? I mean, it is very rare that every newspaper is united in complete agreement about what the biggest story in town is. And it's so rare, in fact, that it's not even true today. It's almost every newspaper. The Andrew, formerly known as Prince. Yeah, well done, the Sun. We beat you to that as well. King removes style, titles and honours from brother. Andrew stripped of Prince title in historic move to save monarchy. I like that line. Historic move to save monarchy. Finally, says the Daily Mirror, King begins the process to strip Andrew of Prince title. He's ordered to leave Royal Lodge and Fergie's out too. Wills backs Charles's move amid yet more Epstein fallout. Royals say thoughts are with victims of all abuse. An important addendum to the central announcement yesterday, I thought. The royal, formerly known as Prince, says the Daily Star. Andrew, no longer Prince, says the Daily Telegraph. Andrew to be stripped of his royal titles and must move out of home, says the Guardian. Andrew stripped of his Prince title and home, says the Times. Humiliation for Reeves as she changes her story, says the Daily Mail. Sometimes I wonder whether I'm exaggerating about how bonkers everybody in that building has gone. But no, I'm not. I mean, it is on the front page as the kind of turn to page two. But deciding that the biggest story in town is their rapidly deflating balloon of manufactured fury about Rachel Reeves is, even by the standards of the Daily Mail, a moment of, well, I mean, they've put the word humiliation in red, which seems to be a fairly reliable example of what I believe is called projection. Humiliation for the Daily Mail, as it turns out Rachel Reeves had done nothing wrong, but that won't stop them from printing page after page after page of desperate attempts to portray her as some sort of wrong-un, while paying Boris Johnson, who of course had two independent ethics advisers resign in disgust at his contempt for ethics, hundreds of thousands of pounds a year to write a newspaper column. I think that's the line I like most. What are you thinking the big story? What's the big element? What's the most important aspect of this story? Shall I ask you that question on air? Do you want to ring up and tell me the answer? What's the most important aspect of this story for you? Because I don't think you know. I don't mean that in a rude way. I just mean that I don't know what is the most important aspect of this story. Obviously, in the great scheme of things, we'd love to live in a country where victims are the most important element of stories like this, but spoiler alert, we don't. Even with the grooming gang inquiry we have seen this week, five people on the panel, calling for an apology from Nigel Farage for making their plight worse, while Lee Anderson has decided that they should all have to sit down with him and convince him that their suffering is relevant or that their suffering is authentic enough to be included in the inquiry. Two utterly despicable men, one of whom has turned his attention to disabled people this week. So, sadly, public discourse, the establishment, call it what you will, the national narrative does not prioritise victims.